Room, and most journalists in the country received an email from an organisation that you have probably heard of. It's called YouGov. It is one of the most prominent and, albeit, of course, it's an imperfect practice, one of the most high-profile polling organisations. And they were reporting on what the British public thinks about the US military action in Iran. Can you guess where the public sits? Because you wouldn't get the first clue from following most right-wing media, and of course none of them have even mentioned what you think.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, oil prices and markets have responded positively to President Trump's assertion that the war with Iran will end very soon. Oil has fallen to around $90 a barrel after hitting nearly $120 yesterday. But economists have warned that the conflict will mean inflation remains higher for longer. Angela Knight is the former chief executive of Energy UK and has spoken to LBC.
We're not going to see rates come down as we had expected in 2026. So they may not go up too much, but they're certainly not going to come down. We're going to find that filling up our cars with petrol and with diesel, that will go up quite quickly.
More than 3,000 legal experts urging the Prime Minister to rethink proposals to restrict jury trials. Judge-only hearings are being looked at as part of plans to reduce court backlogs in England and Wales. The proposals are being debated in Parliament again later. Labour MP and former barrister Carl Turner has told LBC there's a growing number of Labour backbenchers unhappy with the bill.
There's a rebellion of about 65, but when you look at the amendment stages of the bill, I would expect that number to grow to beyond 80. Members of Parliament don't want to vote their own government down on what has essentially become a flagship policy, but what they are prepared to do is show discontent in big numbers.
The Courts Minister Sarah Sackman KC told LBC earlier that the changes are aimed at making the legal system more accessible. The competition watchdog has told five water firms they can't increase customer bills by as much as they wanted. The decision affects Anglian, Northumbrian, Wessex, Southern and South East Water. And the first three V-level qualifications have been revealed. Students in England will be able to study education, finance and digital from next year alongside A-levels. The Skills Minister Baroness Smith has told LBC the aim is to make it easier to access vocational and technical education.
The route is clearer. The status is high and the needs that the economy has, for example, for an additional 900,000 skilled workers in the key sectors before 2030, is also being met. So this reform is good for young people and it's good for the economy.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 182 at £10,431. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most. Some bright spells developing across the southeast, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Need anything from Tesco?
Snacks and milk, love.
How about discounts on holidays abroad?
Don't forget fruit and veg for our school.
Free nappies for premature babies.
And a quiet hour in store to shop in peace.
Can I get £2.50 cinema tickets on Tuesdays?
We know you need more than just groceries from us. We do all this because every little helps.
Need anything from Tesco?
Oh, yeah, do you want to get some...
For further information, visit tescoplc.com/need-anything-from-tesco.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
I flipping told you, didn't I? Keith, get the tin. Honestly, the way in which Donald Trump will conduct this war is to sow just complete and utter confusion. And by the way, I don't think it's a tactic. I used to think it was a tactic. I used to think it was a modus operandi. But I don't think he can operate in any different way. He is just entirely chaotic. And sadly, he's arrived in a position of prominence at a time in human history when many people are drawn to the chaos. Because I said to you, I think this time last week, that he would be so vague and so contradictory about what the aims of war were that he would claim victory even in the face of fairly epic and obvious failure. If I told you that The Guardian and The Daily Telegraph today make the same pun on the name of the Iran war, the American name of the Iran war. They've called it the Operation Epic Force. And the Guardian and the Telegraph, the polar opposites in many ways of political partisanship in this country, they both go for the same pun and call it Operation Epic Failure. They both moot the possibility, a very real possibility, if not the already apparent reality, that this is an obvious failure. And he will claim a victory, even as he claims that it's going to be over soon, but not soon. It's going to be a complete but not complete victory. There's going to be regime change, but no regime change. There's going to be, there are weapons that need to be removed, but they haven't been removed. There weren't weapons that needed to be removed, but they have been removed. I could sit here for 20 minutes. Well, I think we both know I probably will. I could sit here for 20 minutes and list all of the obvious self-contained contradictions. So within a moment of saying one thing, he will say another thing. There was a beautiful example, if beautiful is the right word. There is an example from yesterday's speech, yesterday's unprompted press conference, which was a masterclass in all of the things that I have described to you. All of the things that I've described to you since this started, since he became president, really. But since this latest term began, all of the things I've described to you, the shillying and the shallying, the reversal and the ferreting, the contradiction and the confusion, all of it is on full display. So yesterday, when he was speaking about an attack on a school in Iran, the bombing of a school, a girls' school in Iran, he moved in the space of a single moment from lying from one lie to another, but both lies were contradictory. It's impossible to exaggerate how significant this is. So he tells a lie about the Tomahawk missiles that evidence now shows 99.9% certainty, and there's always room for doubt, don't forget, came from US fighter jets, US aeroplanes, gets picked up on it by a journalist and tells a different lie. Have we got both lies ready? I worry that I'm the only person pointing this out, or I worry that I'm the only person noticing this, because I look at the rest of the media and they haven't even mentioned the YouGov polling on where the British public stands on this war. Did you know, because I can think off the top of my head of half a dozen people who won't have told you yet, that the opposition to US military action is up by 10 points in a week, standing at a frankly extraordinary 59% of people polled say they are opposed to the military action undertaken by the United States. So the whole shebang, regardless of the UK involvement, we are in numbers that have not been seen in a very long time, united in our opposition to the whole project. But, of course, because we live in a country where public discourse is defined by the terminally wrong, the cheerleaders for the four donkeys of the Krapopolips, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity, and latterly, of course, the fifth member of that hideous troop, Donald Trump, being wrong about all of those things, hideously, catastrophically, nation-damagingly wrong about all of those things, what do they do next? They cash their cheque and move on to the next thing that they're wrong about. It is, I mean, it's odd, really. I could be very, what's the word that I want, disconsolate about it. And I am until I start talking to you. As soon as I start talking to you in the morning, I actually begin to feel rather better about things. For example, you help me. Jane was in touch on Blue Sky with some quotes from Jonathan Swift that must be, what, 300 or 400 years old? Describing almost perfectly the kind of politics that Donald Trump represents. There's something reassuring in knowing that this nonsense has happened before. There's something reassuring about the cyclical nature of history. The good rise, the good fall, the mad rise, the mad fall. It has happened before and it's never over. It's despite the best efforts of the historian Francis Fukuyama, history is never over. It sometimes just involves the really, really bad stuff going into hibernation for a while. Well, it's not in hibernation now. Anyway, look, just before I forget, here is an example. So a girls' school in Iran was bombed very early on in the war by the Americans. This is Donald Trump talking about it a minute before he said something else.
The American missile strike and a Tomahawk missile likely destroyed that Iranian girls' school. So will the Americans, will the U.S. accept any responsibility?
Well, I haven't seen it. And I will say that the Tomahawk, which is one of the most powerful weapons around is used by, you know, is sold and used by other countries, you know that. And whether it's Iran, who also has some Tomahawks, I wish they had more, but whether it's Iran or somebody else, the fact that a Tomahawk is very generic, it's sold to other countries, but that's being investigated right now.
That's not laughter in the background. That's a clamour to get the second question. So he lies and he lies and he lies again. Of course he's seen it. He's the commander-in-chief of the United States military, and there is well-documented and well-widespread, widely disseminated evidence of what has happened here. The footage that has been examined by everybody from the New York Times to, I don't know, the Arkansas Bugle is out there in the public space. A man who spends his entire life on social media is claiming that he's somehow missed it. Oh, and by the way, Iran has Tomahawk missiles as well, but you know, it's Donald Trump. He lies. I can't remember the last time he told a completely different and contradictory lie quite so quickly after the last lie.
You just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a Tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this. Even your defense secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday. Why are you the only person saying this?
Because I just don't know enough about it. I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. But Tomahawks are used by others, as you know. Numerous other nations have Tomahawks. They buy them from us. But I will certainly, whatever the report shows, I'm willing to live with that report.
So he lies and then he lies again and then he lies again. And then members of his regime tell different lies or occasionally tell the truth. But he undoes the truth by telling a lie. And suddenly nobody knows what's what. Nobody knows whether up is down, black is white, freedom is slavery, or ignorance is strength. And he will claim that he won the war, even though the Ayatollah has been replaced currently by his own son. Even though none of the Gulf states that they were told, and I wonder whether Benjamin Netanyahu told Donald Trump that they would all weigh in on his side, none of the Gulf states want a piece of this. None of them want any of this. Senior member of the sort of UAE ruling class making it clear yesterday how they feel about Donald Trump starting a hideous and dangerous war smack in the middle of their backyard, not his. And here we are. I must get the name of that journalist, actually. I did have it in front of me, but I've not got the piece of paper. What I have got in front of me, as always, is a piece of paper with about five words on it. That's how I like to start the show. In fact, today, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I had five words, and then I've just added another one and drawn a box around it. The sixth word is liar. So here are the three things I wrote down before I came on air this morning. Is that too faint for you to see? And those three phrases, or five words, 3 points, refugees, terrorism, cost of living. Okay? I don't care what your politics is, I don't care how tightly your scarf is knotted around your neck to the point, for many people, that it's cut off the flow of blood to the brain. Can we all agree that creating more refugees, creating more terrorism, and but negatively impacting the cost of living are bad things? I personally don't have a problem with refugees, but I'd rather they weren't refugees. Some people, of course, want to set fire to them in their own beds, and they are invited onto stage at Nigel Farage's party conferences and treated like folk heroes in organs like the Daily Telegraph. So some murderous, evil people want to kill refugees or encourage other people to kill them. I'm not one of those people, but I don't want more refugees, because if there are more refugees in the world, it means they are fleeing war, famine, pestilence. They are fleeing horrors. And Donald Trump has just visited horrors upon Iran, which is currently, before this war even started, the country from which the third highest number of human souls crossing the English Channel in small dinghies hail. So we already have an Iranian refugee crisis, and Donald Trump has just made it even bigger. Terrorism. Can we all agree that terrorism is bad? I'm not a big fan of banning people from the program, but if you don't agree that terrorism is bad, we're probably going to fall out. Let's say extremist Islamist terrorism, if you want to be quite specific about it. Let's get rid of that as well. Let's say that that is a very, very bad thing. What do you think this is going to do in the context of terrorism or state-sponsored terrorism? Or even if they were to successfully dismantle the Iranian regime, spoiler alert, they're not going to. It's too difficult. He'll give up and claim victory before it's even over. Then this would have enhanced that likelihood. Just as the way in which the genocide in Gaza has created 2, 3, 4 more generations of people who will hate the state of Israel. Whoever is in charge, even if and when they get rid of the war criminals and psychopaths who currently dominate Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet, even when they're long gone, the hatred that they've engendered among people right across the region will stay for generations. So if you're in favour of the war in Iran, you're in favour of more refugees coming to Britain. If you're in favour of the war in Iran, you're in favour of more terrorism blighting the West. And if you're in favour of the war in Iran, you're all for increases in the cost of living in the United Kingdom. Because that's the other thing that you can extrapolate from yesterday's YouGov polling that has been completely ignored by every single journalist and editor in the country who told you that the war in Iran was a good thing. Everybody knows that it's going to have a negative effect on our cost of living. If you have your oil delivered, and we used to, when I lived on a farm in Worcestershire, we had our oil delivered. Just for the avoidance of doubt, we weren't farmers, but we lived on a farm. It's not complicated, but I did see something on Twitter about 6 months ago that failed to understand that simple distinction. On the farm that we inhabited in Worcestershire, we used to have our oil delivered. That's gone up by double. More in some cases. Cost of living will go up. Some people are responding to the fact that our reliance upon fossil fuels makes us incredibly vulnerable at this point in a historical cycle by claiming that we should be more reliant on fossil fuels. If ever there was a twin case for pursuing sustainability and net zero at a million miles an hour, it would be Ukraine and Iran. Imagine if we were able to keep the home fires burning without actually burning any fossil fuels. But no, they'll be queuing up to tell you we need to drill in the North Sea, we need more fossil fuels, why can't we dig up our own coal? Whatever the argument will be, we must be more reliant upon a finite resource that is incredibly bad for everybody, and not reliant upon an infinite resource that doesn't do anybody any harm ever. And then we come back to the people who told you that the war in Iran would be a good thing. The people in favour of more refugees coming to the United Kingdom, the people in favour of more terrorism, perhaps affecting the United Kingdom, and the people in favour of increased cost of living for everybody in the United Kingdom. And they're in charge of everything. They write all the front pages. The BBC slavishly follows where the newspapers lead. Covers things in the same way, analyzes Donald Trump's comments from yesterday without adding, he lies all the time. He cannot be trusted. And even if he accidentally says something that's true, he will say the polar opposite 2 minutes later. That's not an opinion. That is counting. And as I said to you a week ago, none of us know how to do this. None of us know how to report upon something so obviously unreliable, so profoundly fraudulent, so utterly, utterly dishonest. How do you report on someone? Imagine if it was a football commentator telling you that a goal had been scored when it hadn't. How do you report on that game if you're relying upon that football commentator's analysis? Oh, it's 3-0 to the Reds, but the Blues just scored 5 goals. It's 3-0 to the Reds. Well, I haven't seen it. Well, we're having an inquiry. Well, if it turns out that the Blues are 5-0 up, then I will go, I can live with that report. Lie, 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 lie. And this, of course, is so obvious. This is so clear. This is undeniable. This is irrefutable. The British public, despite being so poorly served by the Fourth Estate, by various journalists and broadcasters who have been feeding them lies, poison and nonsense now for the best part of 3 decades, the British public this time saw through it. Because the polling is absolutely extraordinary. Would you like a little giggle as we survey incredibly serious territory? Since Kemi Badenoch came out squarely in favour of more war, Conservative supporters have turned against the war by a factor of 10. So Conservative support for this war has gone down by 10 points since Kemi Badenoch started rattling her sabre, her Fisher-Price sabre, and banging her Tonka drum. Tonka don't make drums, do they? But I don't imagine Fisher-Price makes sabres either, but you take my point. So the British public, this time, has seen through it. Didn't see through Brexit, didn't see through Boris Johnson, didn't see through Liz Truss, didn't see through austerity. But the British public, the plurality of the British public, a significant majority of the British public want absolutely nothing to do with any of this. 60%, 59 to be precise, are opposed to the military action. 25% are in favour of it. And they are, of course, the people who will claim that they despise refugees, that they hate terrorism, and that it's all Labour's fault that the cost of living is coming down. Absolutely bonkers. So there are, once again, two questions that I need your help with this morning. Before that, the journalist who you heard, Sean McCreesh of the New York Times, was the one that hit him hardest in the second question, and Manu Raju of CNN made the original point. Great journalism. You can still do it if you can get into that big room, but you're not going to be getting into the kind of scenarios where they attack Volodymyr Zelensky. So there are still good journalists out there, In this country and in the United States of America, and we, goodness knows we need to look after them. Because this time, the bad journalists have not succeeded. The bad politicians have not prevailed. The British public has not bought it. They won't be fooled again, until, of course, we are. And that's what I want to know. I want to know why. Why on this one, and to a lesser extent on the genocide in Gaza, which, again, you would not know public opinion on from looking at any newspapers or most broadcast platforms. Why on this issue have the massed ranks of the marriage between right-wing media and right-wing politicians, why has it failed so completely? Even as they parked their metaphorical tanks on the lawn, the numbers supporting this war have gone down. Even as Kemi Badenoch did a tour of all the television studios shortly after giving herself an inspirational pep talk in the mirror in the ladies' toilet, the support for the war went down. The Daily Mail came out all guns blazing and support for the war went down. The Daily Telegraph described it as a national necessity and Keir Starmer's failure to get involved as a national shame, and support for the war went down. Dick by name Little John in the Daily Mail described it as the thing that made him more ashamed to be British than anything that has ever gone on before, up to and including the time that he based his views on what the country was like on a 25-year-old episode of The Bill. And support for the war went down. So they've tried everything. They've launched everything. They've pulled every lever. They've nudged every, well, you can't nudge focus groups, but they've co-opted every op-ed page. They've written every headline. They have tried absolutely everything. And it has failed on a scale I can't remember seeing before in Britain, certainly not in Brexit Britain. I can't remember seeing all of the usual suspects, all of the usual engines of corruption and destruction and nation-damaging idiocy, I can't remember seeing them all fail so completely. And I want you to tell me why. I want you to tell me two things today. Why, and I worry as I get older that I'm becoming less mellow. In some ways I'm becoming more mellow, but I no longer worry about using words that you might find offensive. They are idiots. They are murderous idiots, the people that have been calling for more war. They are measurably stupid. They are ignorant of everything from what happened in Iraq right through to the Chilcot inquiry and the 10 points that emerged from that as things you must do before going to war. And guess what? I've got it laminated. If you weren't listening yesterday, you probably think I've gone even madder than usual. But I've actually got it laminated. I've got the Chilcot checklist laminated within 24 hours of asking for it. This is what Emily Maitlis feels like every day in this building. She asks for something and it happens. And if you don't believe me and you're listening on the radio, that is the sound. What's the noun for something that's been laminated, Keith? Laminant? Is it a laminant? Anyway, that is the sound of a laminated document. Children. And they're ignoring that as well. So, question number one. Why? 03456060973. Are the British public, why have the British public seen through this one when they haven't seen through the previous five? 03456060973. And what on earth possessed the Farages, the Badenochs, the Little Johns, the Ted Verity, who edits the Daily Mail, I can't remember the name of whoever edits the Daily Telegraph at the moment, but what on earth possessed all of the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail, the Daily Express, the Murdoch Munchkins, what on earth possessed them all to support this war when it was obvious to everybody from the very beginning that even if there was a compelling case for attacking Iran, you don't do it in the company of a genocidal maniac and a lunatic Mango Mussolini? 03456060973 is the number you need to tell me one or two of two things. Why has the British public got it right this time? 03456060973. And why did the massed ranks of cheerleaders for the four donkeys of the Krapopalypse decide to back this madness at this time led by this sociopath? Hit the numbers now. You will get through. LBC.
Amazing deals on package holidays. Pay now.
I've got tickets to that sold-out show. Message now.
Your subscription's been suspended. Update your payment details.
Final warning. To receive your package, pay the fee immediately.
Mum, I've had an accident. Please send money.
There's been suspicious activity on your bank account, and I need a few personal details.
Fraud is getting more sophisticated. Always stop, think, and check. Stay ahead of scams at gov.uk/stopthinkfraud.
The same band. The same chorus. Different headphones. The Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro. Pre-order today from Samsung.com and try superior sound for 100 days. Love it or your money back. The Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro. Your sound, your way. Buy before the 30th of April. Register with Samsung within 30 days. T's and C's apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at notcatch.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I remember the moment. It was Monday or Tuesday of last week. And listen, I love it when it happens. I love it more when you do it to me. Okay? But I do also love it when I do it to myself. When I'm just going over the facts, I'm just running through the detail, and I get hit by something so obvious and so important that it knocks me sideways for a split second. And it was live on the programme, wasn't it? A week ago. It was last Monday or Tuesday. We simply clocked. I clocked, and you probably beat me to be fair, but I did it in real time, live on the radio. That's why we'll never know. He will lie and lie and lie again. He will contradict himself. He will confuse the issue. He will claim black is white, up is down, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. And it is, I'm afraid, I think, an irrefutable position. I don't think you can argue with that prediction or that description of what has happened and what is happening now. You just can't, can you? Even if you love Donald Trump because you're racist or misogynistic or a climate change denier or two or three of the above. You can't deny it. He says one thing, his defense secretary says another. He says one thing, his secretary of state says another. He says one thing, he says another, 10 seconds later. You can't argue with this analysis. And that means that now, as we saw yesterday, when he claims that he's won, we won't have any key, we won't have any gauge to judge whether he has actually succeeded in his aims or not, because his aims changed every 10 minutes. And when that penny dropped, I don't know, it felt like a strangely liberating moment. So why have the British public seen through these lies, and what on earth possessed the people all over the UK media and the UK political establishment who supported this nonsense from the start? And, of course, don't forget, wanted Keir Starmer to get in there with Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. Wow. Wow. Just think about those words for a minute. You've got Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu waging a probably illegal war, and people that left the single market because they claimed to care about sovereignty wanted us to follow them without asking any questions. Wow. Paul's in Enfield. Paul, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, I do agree with you. I'm tired of it. I'm an ex-serviceman myself. Okay. And in the Royal Navy. I'll be completely honest with you. I certainly haven't voted for Keir Starmer, but I think, he has got it right on this occasion. And I think people are disillusioned with what comes out of politicians' mouths most of the time. So with things about war, and I was listening to Trump last night, and I thought, you really are talking a load of old nonsense.
A load of old toot. We like the word toot on this programme, Paul. Yeah, a load of old toot.
Yeah, that's my wife uses that one.
It's a great word.
But yeah, no, it's tiring. And, I've got young kids, and I'm thinking, what does the future hold for them? And then when they see these images and of people with refugees that are coming over, and I'm all for helping people. I really am.
Sure.
I've done that as part of humanitarian work whilst I was in the Navy, and it's just incredibly sad to see. And I think he must be making loads of money out of all of this. It's, I'm looking at it, it's got to be a financial reason why he's doing it. And, you know, and I would like to see the evidence of this, these nuclear weapons. Or
Don't hold your breath, whatever you do.
Why do you think?
I mean, I don't know whether being an ex-serviceman gives you a different perspective, because of course yours is not to reason why. Yours is just to do or die. In the words of Lord Byron. Well, not so much now that you're no longer in the forces. But why do you think? Because it's a minor obsession of mine for reasons that I explain quite regularly. But the combination, the marriage of oligarch-owned right-wing media and oligarch-owned right-wing politicians normally win. Apart from Keir Starmer's election victory, which was almost inevitable after the absolute mess that Johnson and Truss made of absolutely everything, they normally win. They normally get their way. When Tony Blair was Prime Minister, they got their way. We went to war in Iraq. And they've done everything on this one, mate. They've pressed all the buttons. They've called in all the favours. They've written all the front pages. And support for the war has gone down over the course of that week. So why? What's changed? What's happened there?
I seem to think, I mean, when I served, there was a lot of guys that were from, you know, the demographics of the Royal Navy was very, very, you know, people from all parts of the country. And when we look at it, we're all human beings. And I think more than anything, we don't join up to fight people. We join up to try and make a difference. So for me, I went to places and did hurricane relief work and stuff. And it's about the adventure of being in the forces, and certainly the last thing I'd ever want to do is kill anyone. And unfortunately, when you see Trump, I think, and when he was going on about the servicemen that were flown back into Dover, and he gets, oh, this beautiful man, it's beautiful. I thought, really, that's someone's child that's died.
Did you see what he was wearing he was wearing a bloody baseball cap.
I know, it's so disrespectful, and it just pained me to watch it. It really did.
Yeah, I get it. A very personal perspective, Paul, and a very powerful one. It pains me as well, and yet I've got this weird personality. I don't know if it's a defect or a strength. I want to understand the people that don't feel the repulsion that we feel. I want to understand how you can see Donald Trump in a baseball cap counting in the bodies. Even Fox News daren't show that footage. They showed old footage of Trump welcoming troops who died somewhere else in a different campaign back to the United States of America. They didn't show the footage on Fox and Friends of him wearing the baseball cap while the coffins progressed past. I did a deliberate mistake there during my conversation with Paul. Well done to everybody who spotted it. It was, of course, Lord Tennyson, not Lord Byron, who wrote the line about ours is not to reason why, ours is just to do or die in the charge of the Light Brigade. So 10 out of 10, top of the class to everybody who spotted that deliberate mistake. Questions remain. Why has this one not worked? Why have the people who sold this country everything from the genocide in Gaza, which, to be fair, the public doesn't support, right through to the war in Iraq, Brexit, the election of Boris Johnson, all of the people who pulled all of those levers and delivered all of those disasters have failed completely on this one, and I don't know why. I wonder whether you have a theory. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Starting with some breaking news, a man has been charged with murder following the death of Ian Huntley. The double child killer was attacked in a high security jail in Durham at the end of February. Huntley's life support was switched off last week. Oil prices and markets have responded positively to President Trump's assertion that the war with Iran will end very soon. Oil has fallen to around $90 a barrel after hitting nearly $120 yesterday. And more than 3,000 legal experts are urging the Prime Minister to rethink proposals to restrict jury trials. Judge-only hearings are being looked at as part of proposals to reduce court backlogs in England and Wales. LBC weather dry and cloudy for most. Some sunny spells will develop in the southeast later. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Did you know a new traffic-free Oxford Street is coming? This year, The Mayor of London will begin to pedestrianise London's flagship high street, creating more space for everyone. That means soon you could be hearing less.
Excuse me, coming through.
And more. A bit less.
Come on! Sorry.
And plenty of. To find out more, search Oxford Street Transformation.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers, dog lovers, bait clubbers, banger dancers, baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:35 is the time. We should probably double check, but I've got enough people telling me it wasn't just any old baseball cap that Donald Trump wore to greet the return of dead soldiers from Iran. It was his own merch. Merch, if you don't know, probably you can work it out. Short for merchandise. It's a word that the kids use to describe the T-shirts and stuff that you buy at concerts. Merch. It's a thing. We had merch, didn't we, Keith? Did we have some merch at one point? I remember when I started here, you could buy an LBC, you could get a free LBC ice scraper, which, thinking back to the output from some of my colleagues at the time, might have been better described as a barrel scraper. But have we got any merch? I don't think we've got any merch. Have we? Global website has merch. You can get LBC merch. There was investigations into making my giant mug available to the public, but the company that made it went bankrupt and nobody else currently makes mugs this size. Also, the delivery cost would have been prohibitive. It would have cost about £100 to have that delivered, I think. Important to introduce moments of levity when and where we can, because there's nothing remotely lighthearted about what's going on in the world. Yeah, and you're right as well. So he's wearing his own merch, baseball cap, to welcome back dead American soldiers. And these are the people who attacked Volodymyr Zelensky for not wearing a suit when he visited the Oval Office. And I can't... I mean, listen, there's two things going on, isn't there? There's the hat trick, there's the triple answer, the three-way. It's the racism, it's the misogyny, it's the climate change denial. Those of us who are not informed, those of us who are not defined by racism or misogyny or addicted to climate change denial because of the money it will make for us or our bosses, I don't think we can ever fully grasp the seductive nature of those three things. Racism, misogyny and climate change denial. So I sit here every day trying to work out why people I could easily, if the cards had fallen differently, be working alongside, I suppose in some cases I am working alongside people who can't see the ends of their own noses when it comes to supporting Donald Trump. And it can't just be racism, misogyny and climate change denial. So what else is it? How could anybody have thought, yeah, let's go to war with the baseball cap guy, boasting yesterday about a phone call with Vladimir Putin? Did you know this even? Claiming Vladimir Putin had congratulated him on what a great job he was doing in Iran. Let me stop, I've done it again. Let me stop and say that again. Donald Trump boasting about Vladimir Putin telling him what a great job he had done in Iran. Almost certainly a lie. If it's true, it's even more shameful than if it's a lie. That's another little moment that sums up the essence of the man. He will tell a lie, but if it was actually true, it would be even more shameful than the self-serving lie that he's telling. Because shame left the building a long time ago. So, I don't know. A lot of people wondering whether the board game counts as merch. I'm not entitled. Does the board game count as merch? I don't know that it does, actually, because it serves a purpose. Merch, I've always thought, simply just promotes the product. Anyway, we digress. Racism, misogyny, climate change, refugees, terrorism, cost of living. So the more you love the first three, the racism, the misogyny, the climate change, the more likely you are to be supporting Donald Trump's war, which means the more supportive and encouraging you are of more refugees, more terrorism, and more cost of living crisis. which is why the YouGov polling showing that the British public wants nothing to do with this madness is absent from almost all of your right-wing newspapers and will not be mentioned anytime soon by the likes of Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage. Dan's in Amersham. Dan, what's going on?
Morning, James.
Hello.
So a couple of points for you. So I think Keir Starmer is playing it right, and I think support for going to war with Iraq...
Iran.
Could be explained. With Iran.
A bit
by
late for Iraq. We did that on yesterday's show.
but we do remember, right?
We do. I've even got it laminated.
We do have lessons learned, and I think there are a lot of people who are sort of looking at oil prices, inflation coming, and I think there's a lot of people in this country that want to sort out our land first. I think that's going on.
Well, you're probably right, but remember how keen we were to support the Ukrainian people against the illegal Russian invasion. So, I mean, it doesn't always trump everything, pardon the pun, does it? The sort of sort our own house out first. If a war is obviously just, if it's a war of resistance against a murderous dictator, I like to think the British people would put up with a little bit of discomfort, or even quite a lot of discomfort, to side with good against evil. But no one is really describing this war as good against evil.
No, I think, you know, just on that point, mainland Europe, we remember, obviously, the Second World War,
yes,
et cetera. So I think that's also deep in the psyche. There's a second point I wanted to make, which might be, it's just a thought I had.
Yeah,
I think, you know, you may find some of our population that lean more towards the far right, actually thinking through, do you know what, this war's going to lead to more immigrants on boats. And maybe that's another factor.
So they want that?
They don't want that.
Because I think someone like Farage, I mean, I don't want to credit him with too much intelligence, but he might welcome that. Remember what he does with the posters. I remember on the morning that Joe Cox was assassinated by a white supremacist terrorist, Farage unveiled a poster with Nazi echoes of foreign-looking people snaking across European land in a massive queue, and that he used it to win votes. He used it to frighten people. So if the boat stopped tomorrow, Farage would be absolutely screwed, mate.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So why does he want a war in Iran? Because he wants more.
To spin that agenda.
Yeah.
He wants to spin that agenda. But I think some of the people that are leaning towards voting reform are actually looking at it going, do you know what? This war is just going to lead to more people coming over.
And are they bright enough? And I mean that genuinely. I'm not being rude, or if I am being rude, I'm being intentionally rude. Are they bright enough to realise that their hero is calling for a policy that would create more of the refugees that they all want to kill in their beds?
I think certainly some
maybe,
absolutely would
maybe
be thinking that way, and they're not necessarily going to buy the spin. And there's quite a lot out there on social media with the left attacking on this particular line, and I think it's absolutely valid. And I think any inquiring mind,
generally think of reform supporters and inquiring minds in the same breath, but that may be a me problem, because I mean the figures are pretty stark. Strongly support or somewhat support. If you are a reform voter, you are so out of touch with the rest of the country. You're looking at about a 57% support the war, but 27% are opposed to it. 27% of reform voters are opposed to it. So that those are the people that you're talking about, the ones that maybe are bright enough to realise they're going to be causing another refugee crisis by doing what their hero wants them to do. The other, but by party, that the other numbers absolutely dwarf the reform numbers. Even the Tories only strongly supported at 14%, and reform come in at 28%. And the overall support for this war among Tories has gone down by 10% since their own leader started telling them why we should be supporting this war. I think you're probably onto something there. You can persuade me. We were persuaded by Iraq, and we were wrong to be persuaded by Iraq. But if you can successfully portray a regime as posing a very real threat to the West, which they did do with Saddam Hussein, even though it turned out to be untrue, George W. Bush, of course, used the September the 11th terror attacks to justify the war against Iraq, even though Saddam Hussein and Iraq had next to nothing to do with them. So you can make it work even if it's not true, and they haven't done that here either. Benjamin Netanyahu, since 1996, claiming that Iran was days away from a weapons of mass destruction. He was lying then, and he's lying now. But just because he's lying doesn't mean it wouldn't work, and it hasn't worked this time. And I'm not entirely sure why, but we're getting good answers. Thank you, Dan. Michael's in Newark. Michael, what would you like to say?
Well, yeah, I'd like to say that I think this is all down to greed. It's all down to money. I think
Trump was very clear when he came into power when he said, we're all going to make a lot of money out of this. He used Elon Musk as part of his team, one of the richest men in the world. And as I was saying to you, to your colleague, I was in Brighton over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Probably one of the most diverse towns, cities that you will ever go to.
Yes.
We all know it's got a big LGBT community. There are a lot of Eastern Europeans, there are a lot of Asians, there are a lot of all races and all creeds, all colours, and everybody was just getting on with their life. It was brilliant.
A lesson to us all. Heston Blumenthal making a similar point on Question Time last week, actually, and of course our discourse is dominated by people that would seek to divide and do the opposite of what you describe. And my mystery this morning, really, Michael, is why it's not working this time, because it's worked all, and it will work again in the future. Don't break out the champagne just yet. We'll be back to biting chunks out of each other, and Farage's mates will be calling for refugees to be burned in their beds and telling various lies and probably taking bribes from Kremlin stooges like his old best mate Nathan Gill did. We will reverse again, but so why didn't this one work? Why has it not worked this time?
I think a comment you made about Trump wearing his own merch.
Yeah. It's
people
him.
People realise he's in it for the money.
It's him.
It's not
the war, it's not the cause, it's not the detail, it's him. We cannot staple ourselves to him.
I don't know whether this is true, but somebody reckoned that his son bought £300 million worth of oil 2 days before the war started.
That's the youngest son, that's Barron Trump. It looked to me like a dodgy kind of internet statement, that, and if it was even true, I don't think we would know about it. But Tom Kerridge, not Heston Blumenthal. Ah, flip it, heck. What a show. I've got Tennyson and Byron mixed up, and I just got Heston Blumenthal mixed up with my mate Tom Kerridge. Sorry, Tom. It was Tom Kerridge on Question Time who was making the points that Michael was making. I'm pretty sure that Barron Trump thing isn't true, but I would look at crypto more than anything else when it comes to the ways in which these people are going to enrich themselves, either legally or illegally, in the context of geopolitics. And of course it is crypto that Nigel Farage has just invested £285,000 in, a firm that's headed up by Kwasi Kwarteng, while taking enormous donations from a bloke whose enormous fortune hinges largely upon cryptocurrency. As I said, legally or illegally, and in this case I'm sure it's all absolutely legal. 10:46 is the time. Why is it working? Is it just Trump? Is Michael right? You see a bloke in a baseball bat, and in fact I'm looking at the polling. Support for this mad war among reform voters is completely out of kilter with the rest of the country, including whatever a conservative voter is these days, whatever's left in that category. I suspect the numbers on approval for Donald Trump would look pretty similar. Can we see if we can find those? Do you find this stuff interesting, or is it just my anorak nature? I suspect support for Donald Trump, which is also hideously out of kilter among Nigel Farage's strange little followers, would be pretty close to support for the war, because they'll support him whatever he does. Why? Well, misogyny, racism, climate change denial. And they used to shout sovereignty, didn't they? But I don't know if you can shout sovereignty while also shouting, we must do whatever Donald Trump wants, no questions asked. I don't think you can do both, can you? Although he'll probably try. 10:47 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Cabinet ministers reportedly in revolt over Keir Starmer's plans for digital ID.
You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID.
Nearly half of us say we would oppose a digital ID scheme.
We already have checks and balances in to stop illegal immigrants get work. So why do we need this?
As the government launches a consultation on the policy, the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, exclusively joins me, Tom Swarbrick, for Call the Cabinet. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. I'm
My name's Mark, and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only. Subject to availability. Terms apply.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
When?
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's not quite what I expected it would be. So, the number of Reform UK supporters who support Trump is completely at odds with the rest of the country. Massive outliers. But the numbers are not identical to the numbers of people supporting the war. So you could... there are people supporting the war who are not necessarily Reform UK supporters. But we knew that, Kemi Badenoch. And also, if I were part of the Iranian diaspora, I'd probably be having second thoughts now. But one thing that was absolutely clear last week is that many members of the Iranian diaspora and many people still in Iran, living in hideous circumstances under a murderous and oppressive regime, albeit one that is passionately supported by about 20% of the population, they would welcome an intervention, whoever did it. And the call I took during the last round of attacks on Iran 9 months ago, you remember, the ones that Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump said had been completely successful, had obliterated all threats and were going to keep the area safe for generations. Yeah, those ones. Stand up guys. You can trust them with your lives. I took the call from the woman who said that if her children were being held hostage in her house, she wouldn't care if a rapist ran to the rescue. And you get that, right? You don't care who is leading the attack upon the thing that you despise beyond compare. The worry is, of course, what happens when he gets there? 10:52 is the time. 03456060973 is the number. There's two things going on here. One of which we're making progress on. The other one of which we're not really. Is it possible that it is just the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial? Why is the Daily Mail supporting Donald Trump's war? Because of his racism, misogyny and climate change denial. Why is so-and-so supporting Donald Trump's war? Because of the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial. Why is Call Me Dick Littlejohn more ashamed to be British over our failure to join this incredibly unpopular, probably illegal and hideous war than anything else that's ever happened to... And this is a man who knows a lot about being ashamed being ashamed to be Dick by name, Little John, let alone being ashamed to be British. But why on earth is he blind to the obviousness that the rest of the British public can see as clear as day? Is it just the racism, the misogyny and the climate change that they love so much that they can't even see the horrors of an engagement like this? I genuinely don't know. Why? Why have they done it? 10:53 is the time. And why isn't it working? Pat's in Godalming. Pat, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. So hello, the answer Pat. Why it isn't working is that, simply put, those papers have just contradicted themselves. So they've spent decades telling us Tony Blair was the worst British Prime Minister ever because he supported the war in Iraq, that it was an illegal war.
Yes.
And now, 2 weeks ago, they've come forward saying, we must immediately support this illegal war. And what? People are just going, well, you can't have one and the other after 20-odd years of telling us one thing. Now you're telling us completely the opposite.
I mean, it gets better. Look, there are differences between Iran and Iraq. There are differences in the countries, in the rationales for attacking them, and, of course, in the nature of the attack so far. But I think that you make a powerful central point. But I don't know if you missed what happened yesterday or on Sunday when Tony Blair, as you will know, came out and said Keir Starmer should be joining this war, and the Daily Mail went, yeah, you see, Keir Starmer, Tony Blair says you should join this war. Ha-ha! We've got you now. And, of course, they just hope that everyone will forget that they were describing Tony Blair as the Antichrist, as a monster, I forget the exact front page, a monster of something or other, when he rejected the findings of Chilcot and said that he'd still do it again. So, I mean, I don't know that there's a word for hypocrisy on that scale, Pat. Hypocrisy seems inadequate somehow as a description of the Daily Mail. But you have a higher view of the public than I do on days like this. You think that they are joining dots and arriving at conclusions that they couldn't be trusted yesterday, therefore they shouldn't be trusted today.
Honestly, I think if you told something for 20 years, it's the old Roman saying, call a man a dog once and he'll laugh, call a man a dog 100 times and he'll bark. Well, this is it. We've been told for 20 years, don't join illegal wars, even if America starts it.
And yet Farage is still riding high in the opinion polls.
Yeah, but Farage always will because, as you say, he appeals to a certain population, percentage of the population.
The racism, the misogyny, the climate change denial. And, of course, those are much more popular drugs than many people realised during the good old days of political correctness. So these are conflicting and all the answers will be correct. They don't contradict each other, but I suppose there's different degrees of rightness. How much about the identity of the two men leading the war, either Trump or Netanyahu or both of them, will just prompt most decent people in this country to conclude that even if the war were just, which it isn't, we shouldn't be getting involved with these two characters on any level whatsoever?
If it was perceived as a just war, then there would be full support for it.
If they even with those two men leading it, and with their recent and historical track records, I kind of think you're right. I almost hope you're right. If it was Ukraine, for example, imagine if Donald Trump was attacking Russia with the capacity and the passion that he's attacking the Iranians, who have, of course, invaded nobody. It would be a wonderful thing, and we would probably welcome it, even as we would point out that he might change his mind tomorrow. You can't trust a single thing he says. He's a convicted felon, a multiple bankrupt, and his name appears in the Epstein files more often than Harry Potter's name appears in all 7 Harry Potter books. But that's my job. Thank you, Pat. Alicia's in Coventry. Alicia, what would you like to say?
I just wanted to say, I'm a uni student, and we were debating this exact topic yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
We were looking at the UN Charter and obviously international law, and we came to the conclusion it is an illegal war. We came to the conclusion so quickly, we just had time to discuss that. Why is it then being supported? So it was quite literally the topic that we're doing now.
Fantastic.
We're just thinking, well, obviously, it's just so shocking to us why people would support it. And like you said, I think if it was a just war, maybe there would be support for it. Mm. I think it's more, not even the fact that we've had Iraq in the past and things like that. I mean, I wasn't even alive then, but I obviously, even the impact of it is still, I can still see it. I do think it's more the fact that we've got Trump and then we've got Netanyahu. So we've got who's a war criminal and then we've got a convicted felon and we've got someone who's in the Epstein files. I think it's just characters of them to make people realize that this probably, whatever they say, intentions are probably a bit different. Even if Iran has an awful regime, and obviously it does.
Absolutely.
I just think the characters that are in the war that are making people feel that they can't...
That's a really interesting tension, isn't it, between those two theories that have been brilliantly expounded on the show this morning. Is that we would not these men are utterly untrustworthy, and history has taught us that we need incredibly high levels of trust to do anything like this again. And
exactly. It's not like a small act. It's like a whole use of force. They're going into a war.
What were you and your peers most surprised by? Because I am a lot older than you, and I do this for a living, and I can't believe contempt for international law. It first popped up. It's always been there when you're discussing Israel's actions in the Middle East or Netanyahu's actions, particularly in the Middle East. But the way in which, partly as a consequence of him probably, international law has been diluted and derided and undermined to the point now where British politicians, British commentators, British journalists are going, oh, well, they've broken international law, so we can break it too. That's quite frightening.
We were talking about it because some of the students that we were with wanted to go into international law, and it just feels useless. It feels like you can't do anything with it.
Wow.
The reason the discussion ended so quickly is because we came to the conclusion, well, nobody's following it anyways. It was that important. Like, if it was as important, like, if the UN Charter was as important as it was intended to be, then it would be in the headlines. We've broken international law. But because we've heard it so much...
And as it used to be, I mean, that is the problem. I mean, the rationale for opposing Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine is international law. It's the UN Charter. It's just unfortunately that it has been completely derided and diluted, I would argue, and people would be more than free to argue back, by the free pass given to Netanyahu's regime in Israel for their riding roughshod over international law for years. In an attempt, of course, to avoid being held to account by domestic law, in his case, back in Israel. And if he's allowed to do it, then why the hell can we... How does America get to tell Vladimir Putin that he can't do it? Or how does America get to tell anybody else that international law is important? Well, one of their key allies, who's visited, I think, Donald Trump 7 times during the second term of presidency, is given absolute impunity to break international law and undertake genocide in Gaza whenever and however he pleases. And now, of course, 700,000 people in Lebanon have been taken out of their homes. I did this yesterday or at the end of last week. Quite a few of you got in touch to comment on it, so I'll do it again. Just imagine now you had to evacuate your home. Right now. That's the message coming out your radio or your mobile phone pings. You've just got to go because your neighbour's going to bomb. 700,000 people in Lebanon removed from their homes, ordered from their homes by the Israeli Defense Force. And it's barely getting a mention. Of course, it is getting a mention. Lindsay Hulson for Channel 4 News doing great coverage, and many others. But in the context of the people that are telling you this war is a great idea, they're ashamed to be... Do you know what Dick by name Little John is writing about today? 700,000 Lebanese people are ordered to abandon their homes as a consequence of Netanyahu's latest attacks. Public support for the war in Iran is disappearing down a plug hole. Do you know what he's writing about today? Lollipop ladies.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a man has been charged with murder following the death of Ian Huntley. The 52-year-old was attacked in a high-security jail in Durham at the end of February. Huntley was convicted of murdering schoolgirls Jessica Chapman and Holly Wells in Cambridgeshire in 2002. LBC's North East reporter Phoebe Abbruzzese is following developments.
The 52-year-old suffered serious head injuries during an assault at a workshop at HMP Franklin last month. He later died in hospital. Durham Constabulary say 43-year-old Anthony Russell's now been charged and is due to appear at Newton Aycliffe Magistrates Court tomorrow.
Oil prices have eased in response to President Trump's suggestion that the Iran war may soon be over. Donald Trump has also threatened Tehran with fire and fury if it stops the flow of oil in the Strait of Hormuz. Stock markets have reacted positively to Mr. Trump's remarks, with the FTSE 100 index up 1.6% soon after opening earlier this morning. Separately, there's calls for the Home Secretary to stop a controversial Iran-linked march from going ahead in London this Saturday. The Al-Quds Day rally has previously been accused of platforming anti-Semitic abuse. The Justice Minister, Sarah Sackman, KC, has told LBC there should be robust action against people showing support for Tehran.
Those expressing support for the malign regime in Iran and the IRGC and its proxies have no place in our society. They shouldn't be on the streets of London calling for hate and hostility against this country. That's thoroughly anti-British, and I expect the police and the Home Secretary to take the necessary action against those people.
Organisers have claimed the event, which is in support of Palestinians, is peaceful. The Justice Secretary has defended his plans to limit jury trials ahead of a possible Labour backbench rebellion. David Lammy says the changes for England and Wales are vital to keep the criminal justice system running. The proposals are being debated in Parliament again today. And the competition watchdog has told five water firms they can't increase customer bills by as much as they wanted. The decision affects Anglian, Northumbrian, Wessex, Southern and South East Water. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 171 at 10,421. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most. Some bright spells will develop across the southeast, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 11. Here's the thing, and I don't know whether you picked up on this. I was asking two questions in the last hour. Sometimes I do unconscious emphasis. I lean into one question more than I lean into the other, and as a consequence of that, you will focus almost exclusively on the question I'm leaning into. I don't think I did that in the last hour. I wanted to have answers to both questions, but I don't think we got any answers to the second question, did we? And that is why have not that many members of the public, but so many members of the establishment, the Tory media and the Tory party, and of course Farage's strange outfit, why have they all come down in favour of this hideous and profoundly unpopular, almost certainly illegal and destined to be hugely unsuccessful war? I love the way Trump is saying it's proceeding ahead of schedule, to which the only, well, he's American, so he's allowed to say schedule, but the only viable journalistic response to him claiming that it's proceeding ahead of schedule is to ask to see the schedule. That's all you do. You ask to see the schedule. And of course, there's no earthly way you're going to see a schedule because A, there isn't one, and B, they wouldn't let you see it because they are almost certainly not going to be following it. But he'll say we're following the schedule. We're ahead of schedule. We're ahead of schedule. Could I see the schedule, please? No, don't be ridiculous. Some people have seen it's the best schedule. It's the greatest schedule that anybody's ever seen. Can we see it? No. I'm not going to bore or tire of pointing this stuff out. It's really important, isn't it? It's really important. 7 minutes after 11 is the time. Speaking of really important, Simon Marks will be with us at 11:45 today for his regular dispatch from Washington, D.C. And Riley's Reform Roundup's back on Tuesday. It began as a one-off. It turns out there are so many stories that are not getting picked up more widely while the rest of the media focuses on things like Keir Starmer's spectacles and his late mother's donkey sanctuary. Henry's got more stories that we feel deserve a slightly wider airing, and I might even have one for him. I'm on a constant quest to find journalists from the younger generations who can actually teach the old gits like me how to do this job properly by holding these charlatans, liars and cheats to proper account. 11:07. So that would be the second question. Why Are they supporting it? And some of the answers you're giving are not flattering, not least when you consider that some of my colleagues have been fully on board with this war as well. It's simple, James, says Jacob. They just like the idea of brown people getting killed. I can't buy that. I can't believe that's the only rationale these people have got for joining a war. So what is it? That question is going to stay on the board. What is it they want? What is it they like about this, given that it's Donald Trump undertaking it? Why would anybody be in support of this war led by him? But I want to move on to something completely, well, it's not completely different now. It stays in the same territory, but it addresses an entirely different question. And this is a much simpler phone-in in many ways than the last hour. It is not a question that demands great understanding or even knowledge, and that can sometimes be quite a good thing. I'm really interested in your opinion. Now, as ever, I'm more interested in the reasoning behind your opinion than I am in your opinion. But on a day like today, on a topic like this one, it's only 52-48. It's the infernal ratio. I'm really interested in your opinion, even if you can't really explain why you hold it or what has informed it, because that is what opinions do, isn't it? They drive decision-making and they provide snapshots of where the public is on an issue without anybody offering up an opinion ever being asked to justify it. Ed Davey has called for the King's upcoming state visit to the US to be cancelled. It's not just the war in the Middle East that has prompted this. In fact, it is much more than that. Donald Trump's really rude and obnoxious comments about the United Kingdom and about Sir Keir Starmer. Ed Davey has responded to Trump's latest outburst, which has, of course, as is always the case with Trump, has been overtaken by another outburst and another appalling display, in this case wearing a baseball cap, or some people tell me a golf cap. Apparently there's a crucial difference to the ceremony marking the return of dead American soldiers from Iran. Soldiers who would still be alive today if Donald Trump hadn't undertaken a war that he can neither justify nor fully explain. And he attended the ceremony to repatriate their corpses while wearing a baseball cap. And also, I think, a bright red tie. He's not even got the grace to wear a black tie at a moment like that. And, of course, these are the people who attacked Volodymyr Zelensky for dressing like a soldier when he turned up in the Oval Office to talk about the war that he is currently fighting against Vladimir Putin. So Ed Davey has called for the King, or at least for the state visit, to be called off, because I don't think these decisions are in the gift of the King. I think on times like this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, actually, which is always true on this program. I may sometimes not remind you of that often enough. Correct me if I'm wrong, whether it's getting Heston Blumenthal and Tom Kerridge mixed up, or getting my Tennysons and my Byrons the wrong way around. I don't think the King gets to make this decision himself. I think the King has to do more or less what he's told by the elected Prime Minister when it comes to things like state visits. They are acts and instruments of diplomacy. Whether or not we look back upon Trump's visit to Windsor Castle when he was allowed to drive around the garden in a carriage with lots of horses in attendance and given some presents and went home feeling very, very happy, whether or not we consider in retrospect that that was worthwhile or successful, I don't know. Probably not. But then again, you don't know how rabid he would have been in the immediate aftermath of those moments if we hadn't tickled his toes so effectively. So he could have been doing hideous things to us or about us that he chose not to do because he had had his toes tickled so effectively by the state visit. I still have an image. I don't think she smokes anymore. But I still have an image of them shutting the door and Camilla sparking up a silk cut while King Charles pulls himself a nice single malt and just, oh, thank God he's gone. So, like, big smiles, like, painted-on smiles standing in the doorway. Have you ever had guests like this? And they're driving up the road and you're waving like this and you're, yeah, thank you, see you soon. Come, but yeah, lovely, thanks. And then you close the door and you look at each other and you just go, oh, thank God that's over. Thank God they've gone. And that would be, I think, Charles and Camilla. Oh, we never have guests like that. Let me be absolutely clear. Charles and Camilla sparking up a silk cut and pouring themselves a scotch as soon as they got rid of Trump and his wife. So I don't know whether we look back on that state visit as a necessary debasement or whether we look back on it as a terrible mistake or just a silly decision. But I do know that he is scheduled to arrive in Washington, D.C. next month. Not next year, next month. And he is currently being treated for cancer, as we know. I don't think it would be in any way appropriate for you to make light of that or to include that in any Republican or anti-royal sentiment. It is a humane response to somebody who is being treated for cancer to point out that it will have depleted his energy reserves, and he is an already old man, which opens up the possibility of, to coin a phrase, pulling a sickie. You know, if it was a knife edge, if his health was creating a knife edge regarding the question of whether or not he should go, I would completely forgive him. In fact, were I his friend or his advisor, I would probably encourage him to let it be known that he is not well enough to travel to Washington, D.C., whether it was true or not. That is option number one. We should write down these options. So, and I'm going to invite you to ring in and tell me which option you prefer. So option number one will be pull a sickie. But it's not entirely true. So we're not having an option that he is actually ill and therefore can't go. These are, should he do these things? Option number one, pull a sickie. Option number two is business as usual. Okay? So that is, the state visit goes ahead and King Charles behaves entirely as he would behave on a state visit to any other president at any other time. And that is option two. Option number three is call it out. I don't think he can do this, but he has been pretty courageous in the context of tradition and protocol in the past. I still think the Queen deliberately chose that hat when she was speaking to the House of Commons in the immediate aftermath of the ridiculous referendum that looked as if it had been designed with the EU flag in mind. It can't have been a coincidence, that, can it? But of course, people on the other side of the argument had already lied about the Queen somehow supporting Brexit, because of course, at the time they were lying about absolutely everything. So could he call it out in some way? Let's call that the hat theory. So he could go, but do something that's sort of a bit like Damian Lewis in, it wasn't 24, was it? What was the one Damian Lewis was in when he kind of played the soldier who got released and came back, and they thought, Homeland. When he sort of sent a message, didn't he, by doing something with his fingers, and he gave an interview and he said he was actually doing the Match of the Day theme tune because he doesn't know Morse code or anything like that. But King Charles could send a coded message. There we go, coded message. So he goes to Washington, D.C. for the state visit, and he sends a coded message of disapproval to the watching world. I don't know what it would be. Hey, there you go. That's a phone-in, if ever there was one. Or at least a text, 84850. He sends a coded message to the rest of the world. And then, is that it? Are those the only options? So he pulls a sickie. He goes and behaves entirely normally. He goes and sends a coded message. Or he goes and... Oh, no, of course not. We've completely missed one. Or he announces that he can't go on principled grounds. He actually makes a statement of support for the United Kingdom and its democratically elected Prime Minister and says now would not be an appropriate time to break bread with an enemy of our interests and an obvious enemy of our government. You know? I like that one, actually. So a principled withdrawal. Those are your four options until you tell me that there are actually more on the table. And I want you to tell me which one you prefer and why. And I want you to ring in on all of them, okay? I want to get representatives of all four positions. It's not going to be one of those phone-ins where I beat you up if you haven't got all your ducks in a row or you can't justify your position. I just need one line of explanation. So King Charles is due to fly to Washington, D.C. next month for a full state visit with Donald Trump, a man who has attacked and insulted our country and our Prime Minister in terms the likes of which have never been seen before by a United States president. No matter, of course, that various quislings, Lord Haw-haws and traitors are siding with Donald Trump against the British government, the question is, what should the King do? What should King Charles do? Should he A, pull a sickie? Should he B, conduct himself entirely as normal? Should he, C, go on the trip but send a coded message of disapproval, a bit like his late mum did after the referendum with her splendid EU-themed hat? Or should he D, actually pull out and announce that he's pulling out because Trump has behaved so appallingly? 0345 6060 973. Should the state visit go ahead? If so, yes, it should. And if not, why not? So I want your answers and your reasons for all of them, but most of all, I just want your votes, okay? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Should he pull a sickie? Should it be business as usual? Should he send a coded message of disapproval while going through the motions? Or should he actually announce that he can't possibly visit the United States at the moment because the president is such an obvious enemy of our values, our interests, and our country? It's 11:18. Your thoughts after this.
LBC.
With Moneybox, it's more than a stocks and shares ISA. It's investing in life's greatest asset, you. And with your money growing steadily over time, you can start living life on your terms. Join over 1 million people saving and investing with Moneybox. Download the award-winning app today. Moneybox, the means to more. Capital at risk, ISA and tax rules apply.
Why do we say older people are stuck in their ways? Are their shoes glued down? Why should they slow down? Will their batteries run out? Why do bosses want young blood? Are they vampires?
Ageism sounds absurd, doesn't it? But those negative comments and assumptions add up, limiting work, health, and who's valued? Will you question it so we can all age without limits? Ageism. Question it. Challenge it. Change it. Agewithoutlimits.org.
A lot of legal decisions in this country are made by magistrates, volunteers, like you and me, working as a team to make decisions on cases in criminal or family courts with support from legal advisors. You don't need specific qualifications or experience. I'm an electrician myself, but you could be anything. A teacher, a delivery driver, unemployed. With ongoing support, you'll learn new skills, enjoy new challenges, and help create positive change for your community. Volunteer. I can be a magistrate.co.uk.
DLC. James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 11 is the time. I'm looking at the text. I'm not going to be able to keep up with the text vote. So unless you phone in, I'm afraid your vote is unlikely to be counted. But if you do send in a pithy comment, I said pithy. If you do send in a pithy comment, then I may have the time to read that out if my screen stops churning in front of me for long enough. The question we're asking, if you're just joining us, is King Charles is due to go on a state visit to the court of Donald Trump next month. I'm saying that in emphasis because it's really soon. And I wonder whether you think he should go. Ed Davey is adamant that he should not. In fact, Ed Davey gave some very powerful comments to Nick Ferrari only yesterday on this very subject. And here they are.
I've supported our relationship with the United States for many, many years. But this is a president who has to be called out. He's corrupt, he's immoral, and he's reckless with his policies. It will damage every listener will now see their petrol prices go up, their energy bills go up, and that's because of Donald Trump and the British politicians who keep cheerleading for him. Our king, you shouldn't put him in difficult situations. And if he has to go, in April to the United States, it will put him right in the middle of a highly political situation. I just don't think that's right.
I think Davey is right. I should have told you how I was going to vote. I'm torn between pulling a sickie and a principled withdrawal. Ed Davey there making a very strong case for the principled withdrawal, which I suspect I will end up supporting, unless you've got brilliant arguments as to why I should go for one of the other options, including, of course, that everything goes ahead and it's business as usual. Chris is in Byfleet. Chris, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello. I think I'm kind of with you with regards to my heart with D. I absolutely think in a perfect world, putting him in his place and calling him out would be a phenomenal thing to do from a moral perspective.
Yes.
My only concern, the reason I'm going to stick with A, as potentially the more craven option, but is because his fundamental narcissism and his malicious, malignant personality, I'm not sure it's the hill to die on when, frankly, not going will already be perceived as a snub, whether we have a plausible excuse or not.
So the sickie, which is the cop-out, but not.
It's a cop-out.
It's a cop-out when you compared it to D, to the principled withdrawal, but it's a heck of a lot more preferable than going there either in normal circumstances or with some sort of unspecified coded message of disgust and disapproval.
Yes, I think his supporters are fundamentally conspiracy-minded anyway.
Yes.
So any kind of subtle thing, it's going to be the same as going up and just defecating on his front lawn. It's going to be the same. No matter what he sees, he will take it as...
I suppose there's a fifth option, Paul points out. He should go and call him out to his face.
Yeah. Couldn't you, a vile little man to his face would be phenomenal, but I can't imagine that would be...
I tell you what, that would sort the royal family's reputation out for at least another generation. It'd give William a free pass for about 20 years, wouldn't it, if Charles turned up in D.C. and called Donald Trump, or just made a comment about his brother and the Epstein files or something. I don't know what it would involve.
He's been speaking to Andrew much lately.
Yes, exactly. Is that entirely impossible? I mean, is it unthinkable that Charles would talk about Trump in the way that he used to talk about... architecture, you know, like he used to describe 1960s architecture as carbuncles. He's got a lovely vocabulary and he's got quite a winning way with him. And if he did want to turn his very patrician disdain upon Donald Trump, he could do so in a very stylish fashion. But that's just never going to be permitted, is it? I mean, what would happen if he did? If he said, look, I'm here, and I just want you to know, we think you're disgusting, Donald.
I think that would probably open a constitutional crisis on our side.
And again, why would it?
Well, I think, I mean, ultimately, people have, on one hand, I think it's one hand, they like to have monarchs with principles, but at the same time, they'll see it as intervening in politics, and it could potentially cause further.
Not supposed to intervene in politics.
Blowback, even though, you know.
I'm going to add it to the list, though. I'm going to add an option E, which is he goes and he doesn't do anything coded. He just makes it absolutely clear that he holds Donald Trump in exactly the disdain that everybody honest should do, because of what Ed Davey described as the corruption, the immorality, and if you don't care about those, then the recklessness with which he's going to treat our own cost of living. You can already see it, of course, in petrol prices. So there we go. So that's the first for just pull a sickie. The problem is, of course, if he does pull a sickie and it's real, we're all now going to think that it's not, aren't we? There's no earthly way we're going to go, oh, poor fella, he's not up to it. But I think... it's a difference between what would you do if you were king and what would you do if you were his key advisor? If you were king, you'd probably want to go and do something, like stand up to him or even send a coded message. Or actually, if you were king, you'd probably prefer all of them to business as usual. But if you were his advisor and he was adamant that he wasn't going to go and your job is to minimize the diplomatic fallout... But it's also your job to maximise the royal family's reputation. So, this is a fascinating job. So on these scales, you've got minimise the diplomatic fallout, which would exist, but how big would it be and how much should we care? And then maximise the king's reputation, which is obviously going to involve, even before we saw the polling today, doing what Donald Trump doesn't want to happen, whether it's pulling a sickie, pulling out on principle, or going and attacking him, or going and making a coded... What would you advise as the advisor? What is the best balance between the king's own PR reputation and the diplomatic fallout of the visit either not going ahead or going ahead in different circumstances? Thank you, Chris. Sebastian's in The Hague. That's very appropriate. I feel that this is a question that should be considered in the kind of salons that one expects to encounter in Den Haag. Sebastian, what would you like to say?
I think we just need to be courageous, if I may. Mm. No, I think go with four. But I also want to annoy Trump, and I would postpone the trip and say I'm going to Canada instead.
Is that a Canadian accent I detect there, Sebastian?
It is indeed. It is indeed. I think he should go to Canada.
I think Carney's on his way here at the moment, if he's not here already, with a rather good plan to open a kind of international bank that would be designed to insulate member countries from a fossil fuel crises of the kind that we're currently living through. Is this feasible? I don't know that you can turn things around in a 2 month period, but of course, if he does go to Canada, it takes the sickie argument off the table for a while, because if he's...
Well, no, not necessarily. You could say, I'm going to Canada and then I'll come see you, but he gets sick in Canada and goes home.
I quite like that. I can't do the trip, but you don't think he should go, even if he goes and...
I'm so mixed on this.
It's a
really tough one, but I think it's time people stand up to Trump one way or another.
Yeah.
And it's a small token, but I think he needs to do it. I think the British government needs to do it. and many others. But he can't go there. It's just not right.
Listening to you say that out loud, I think I agree with you. I wonder whether actually we're jumping the gun a bit, and circumstances are already pretty close to having made the entire trip impossible.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just going to be, propaganda for him, right? You know, for Trump in the U.S. He'll just propaganda it, make it whatever he wants to make it, lie after lie.
And the picture's changed since Trump's state visit here, where I personally found the arguments in favor of inviting him and giving him the full English, I found them very compelling. You know, I think some of us still thought that this was a man, a rabid dog that could be mollified, or an absolute monster that could be sated temporarily. And I'm still not a million miles away from that belief, but it's obviously the case that all of the pomp and ceremony in the world isn't going to stop Donald Trump from Donald Trumping.
But now you're getting me annoyed saying that, but not your fault. It's that letter he gave to him in the Oval Office. That should never have happened.
Yeah.
That was a big mistake. He should have just kept it out there as a carrot, you know, dangle it.
He went in early. There was an interesting debate at the time. I came down on the other side to you, and I probably still would if we could rewind and have our time again, because we didn't know what was going to happen subsequently. But, of course, you can argue that we should have done, because we're talking about Donald Trump. You don't need to be clairvoyant to know what he's going to do next. He's going to do something corrupt, immoral, and disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, treat him for what he is, and you just send it up, so...
I wonder. Well, I mean, two questions. What would the king want to do himself? But crucially, what would he be permitted to do? What would he be advised to do? And don't forget, Keir Starmer gets involved in this conversation. So somebody rings someone, his people ring his people, pick up the phone at Downing Street. Hello, Prime Minister's office. Hello, it's the palace here. Really, what's up? What's up, Doc? And the bloke at the palace says, well, thing is, got a bit of a problem. King's not keen on this state visit, and we wondered how best to get out of it. And then they would have a conflab, wouldn't they? They'd have a conversation, and it would involve going through the options. They'd probably mention this radio program. They'd probably say, well, happily and somewhat fortuitously, James O'Brien and his excellent listeners have already run through what the options are. A, pull a sickie. B, business as usual. C, call it out in a coded way while you're there. D, a principled withdrawal. Or E, he goes and he makes it absolutely clear that Donald Trump is now persona non grata at the palace. And which of those would they cobble out together, do you think? Palace interests? Diplomatic interests? National interests? Government interests? King Charles's interests? Which one would be the best case scenario? More of your thoughts after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
A man's been charged with murdering the Soham child killer, Ian Huntley. The 52-year-old died on Saturday after being attacked at HMP Frankland in County Durham last month. The Ministry of Defence says that RFA Lime Bay is being prepared in case it's needed in the Middle East. The landing ship is equipped to function as an aviation platform and has medical facilities. And the Justice Secretary has defended his plans to limit jury trials ahead of a possible backbench rebellion. David Lammy says the changes for England and Wales are vital to keep the criminal justice system running. LBC weather dry and cloudy for most. Sunny spells will develop in the southeast, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK. So we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. to just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
And the conversation continues. What should the king do? Or what should we do? Because he might be the head of state, but he is actually, in many ways, an employee of the state, the king. He can't just go off and do whatever he wants whenever he wants. There are requirements of the role, some of which are explicit and some of which are implicit, some of which are visible and some of which are invisible. The more we talk about it, and it began as a relatively frivolous phone-in, and by that I simply mean compared to conversations about Donald Trump sending people off to die in a war and then not even having the simple grace to remove his baseball cap when their corpses return. Compared to that, this isn't serious, but in some ways it is, because, of course, it's the question of what our head of state should do in the company of, or in the planned company of, this hideous man, correctly described by Ed Davey as corrupt, immoral and reckless. The more I talk about it, the more I think it's not going to go ahead this trip. I don't see how it can. Do you agree? The more you think about it, the more you think, how can it go ahead? Which means they either cause a potential diplomatic incident by announcing that it's not going ahead for the reasons, or they pull a sickie. So, I'm very, very pendulum-y this hour. I'm moving from principled withdrawal to pull a sickie, and from pull a sickie to principled withdrawal. What I'm not looking at is business as usual, it should definitely go ahead, or the slightly, let's be honest, pathetic suggestion of mine that he does what Damian Lewis did in Homeland and send some sort of coded message, or more pertinently, what his queen did. His queen, his mum did. Well, and his queen. It was his mum and his queen, actually, to be completely correct, by wearing a hat that demonstrated her feelings about the ludicrous decision to leave the European Union. 25 to 12 is the time. Of course, there are other options that are not entirely serious. He could go, but dress like Volodymyr Zelensky. He could that I would like to see. He could turn up in the Oval Office in military fatigues, identical to Volodymyr Zelensky's. I don't know much about King Charles, but I am willing to wager every penny I have that he does not own a pair of jeans. I let alone a set of military fatigues, like the kind of overall type. Well, he probably gardens a bit, doesn't he? But I bet my late father never owned a pair of jeans. It was a very, in some ways, quite an old-fashioned man. In other ways, very modern and forward-thinking. But he never owned a pair of jeans. Quite a few men of that generation never owned a pair of jeans. I can't imagine him in trainers either, to be honest with you. Do you think King Charles owns a pair of pumps? Unless he's sort of doing sport? Anyway, I digress. I don't think the option of him turning up in the Oval Office dressed like Volodymyr Zelensky should be on our list of options or choices. Nick's in Lambeth. Nick, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. Excuse my sore throat.
That's quite all right.
I think we should do a sort of hybrid. I think he should not go, but I think the apology or excuse he should put out should be coded. You use the word coded, saying, normally he would love to help the United States, our old friend, celebrate their 250th anniversary of the independence, but under current circumstances he feels the stress would be too great in his sick condition.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of wiggle room there.
Well, the current circumstances being the appalling president of the United States.
But there's room for us to believe that what he actually means is the health. So we that's what the code would be. The coded bit would be current circumstances.
That's right.
I like this. Have you worked in the diplomatic corps, Nick? You are in Lambeth. That's nice. It's not a million miles away from the seats of power. Well, it is one seat of power, of course.
No. I used to be a social worker.
Okay. Oh, that'll do. Yes. Yeah, so you have worked in the diplomatic corps then, just at street level rather than in the upper echelon.
Alternatively, he could go with a dozen Afghan British veterans and introduce them one by one to President Trump. Gosh. And they could each tell them their story of their fighting on the front line.
Oh, you remind us of two things that have been missing from my analysis so far. Yes. The first is, of course, that it is a visit to mark the 250th anniversary of American independence, although quite why we'd be celebrating that is beyond me.
Yes.
And the second bit is, we lost. And the second bit is, that he insulted 457 or 454. There's some dispute about the final number, and I'm not entirely sure why. Right. But British military personnel that died in Afghanistan, who were described essentially as cowards by Donald Trump in January of this year, just a couple of months ago. That's another reason why he can't go there and assume the position, isn't it?
Well, I would love to see Trump being forced to shake the hands of people who actually had fought in the front line.
Yeah.
He probably would. He wouldn't go. He wouldn't attend a reception. He'd
yeah. Well, he would have to, wouldn't he? He would have to. Thank you, Nick. I don't know. Maybe a Strepsil, or a honey poultice might do the trick. It is 11:38. Mark's in Southall. Mark, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, I definitely think that King Charles should not go to America in any shape or form. I think that Trump would turn it around, whatever happened, whatever King Charles said, he would turn it around and completely blatantly lie about it and say what a success it was.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And I do give you another option. I like the last caller with his distress aspect, but I would say that a very genuine reason given by heads of state is normally to say that under security implications, they can't attend. Which would send a direct snub to America.
Mm.
They would get the message. The rest of the world would get the message. But there was no way that they could actually criticise the reason for not attending.
I mean, listen, we can't read too much into this, even this radio phone-in. But we could probably read more into this one than any other radio phone-in. But no one is saying he should go. Except in the company of Afghan veterans, which is obviously a slightly pie in the sky, albeit a very powerful suggestion. Nobody thinks he should go.
No, I we've got to send some sort of message to him to say that we've stand up
with this. We shall not put.
Yeah,
and of course he's suing the BBC for £10 billion as well. While we're at it, which is our national broadcaster for an edit of things that he actually said, just in a slightly different order, to paraphrase Eric Morecambe, from the order in which he actually said them. Thank you. I think you're right. The idea that the diplomatic corps could kick in and it could be presented as one thing, while everybody might know it was another. Because if you expect the truth to land, then you're completely forgetting about the involvement of Donald Trump, who Donald Trump could conceivably claim that he had been. But we just didn't notice. A bit like Nigel Farage's visit to Florida this weekend to see Donald Trump. And he didn't see Donald Trump. But how surprised will you be when Nigel Farage tries to claim that that's not an embarrassing humiliation at all? I flew all the way to America to see Donald Trump, fully cognizant of the fact that I was not going to see Donald Trump. In fact, I never intended to see Donald Trump. It's like the time he flew out for the inauguration and didn't get invited to the inauguration. Do you remember that? Bless him. So Trump could claim, the king came. What are you talking about? Of course the king came. You just didn't see him. He came very quickly. Alan's in Fife. Alan, what do you reckon?
Oh, I hope I'm not going straight into Idiot's Corner, because I do think he should go.
Good, I'd want to hear this voice. That's not Idiot's Corner territory, mate. Well, hang on, let's not jump the gun. Let me finish. You finish first.
So, I think it's to celebrate American independence, the 250th year of that.
Yes.
It's the American state and the achievement of what they've achieved over those years. And so it's a diplomatic function. It's not supporting where they are now. And British diplomacy and the royal family are very good at this sort of thing. They can say the right things, make it clear why they're there, and steer the narrative as much as it's possible to steer it. And I think he should go. And if he doesn't go, we'd just have to front up. If you make an excuse, we'd just have to front up William anyway, wouldn't we?
Can you separate the country from the president then still? Because I know it's important to do so, and there are, I mean, the approval for this war in the United States of America is pitifully low. Not that you'd know it from the president's pronouncements on the subject. The ditto, the state of the economy, unemployment figures, all of the things that he now lies about in ways that would have been unthinkable even during his first term as president. The lies are now completely dominant. But you think that the public on both sides of the Atlantic would perceive the distinction between a state visit to the United States of America and a state visit to the President of America?
I think they could if they put enough effort into managing the narrative. I worry about it, but yeah. It feels like the more level-headed way to go ahead with it to me.
So a little bit when they go low, we go high then? In a way, because there's no earthly way that Trump's state visit to this country was anything other than a massive ego trip for him. Representing the American people. No American would have watched that who didn't like Trump feeling proud or part of the process as a consequence of simply being American, would they?
No, but we knew Trump was coming from that. That was grubbing. This is different. I'm coming to celebrate America.
Whatever the opposite of Idiot's Corner is, he's swung my pendulum back again. I don't think I'm quite ready. So you would be a business as usual then. He goes and he behaves exactly as he would do with any other president in the White House.
But with much more caution on controlling the narrative, otherwise it's dangerous.
Yeah, well, the last thing you want is for King Charles to be stood there while Donald Trump starts slagging off Keir Starmer.
Absolutely. And look, that could happen.
Well, it not just could, but probably would. And it would be all your fault, Alan.
I'll take it.
But for your Alan's fault. Because, of course, that's what they're doing. They're listening to this phone-in before deciding what they're going to do. I think that Downing Street, I've just rung the palace back now and go, hello? Yeah, hi. I don't know if you just heard Alan in Fife on O'Brien's show, but he points out that we're actually supposed to be honouring the American people, not the actual president. So I think we should probably go ahead with the trip after all. And then fast forward 6 weeks, Donald Trump is standing next to King Charles at some joint press conference and he starts slagging off Keir Starmer or slagging off this country or slagging off Sadiq Khan or claiming that London's a no-go zone or that Shakira law is in place across swathes of the capital and buying into all the other online lies that are so popular among Nigel Farage's core support. Speaking of Nigel Farage, Henry Reilly will be with us at 12:30 for Reilly's Reform Watch. No, Reilly's Reform Report. Reform? Report? Review? What is it? It's almost like the right-wing parties in this country. There's so many different words to describe them. The Reilly's Reform Roundup. Did you hear Eleanor in my ear then? I think you probably did. It was certainly very loud in my ear. It's the Roundup! It's a handbag. It's the Roundup. So Reilly's Reform Roundup with us at 12:30. Before that, of course, in fact, just after this, it's Simon Marks.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Reeves warns of cost of living rises, war in Iran hikes energy prices.
This is ludicrous.
The AA saying drive less to save on fuel and also brake less. Does anyone now actually go for a drive just for the fun of it? Let's go for a run out. No one does that. With the cost of fuel, with the cost of insurance, the appalling state of the roads, no one goes for a drive for fun anymore. So the idea of the AA saying drive less and don't brake too hard or brake less. Well, if you can tell me you've gone out for a nice run lately, I'd be amazed.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK. So we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You. And when it comes to getting aircon into London's hot and stuffy apartments and listed buildings, I'm the daddy. For years, Cool You have supplied and installed fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condensers. So head to coolyou.london today. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. to stretch out. Sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only. Subject to availability. Terms apply.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor?
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
11:48 is the time. One element missing from our conversation about the imminent state visit is the role of royalty in the modern world. And there is an extraordinary piece by Andrew O'Hagan in the London Review of Books that I cannot recommend highly enough. But enough about that. Let's get back to the United States of America, where Simon Marks awaits. I'm sure you derive about as much pleasure as I do from being proved right daily about what was going to happen next and what was going to unfold and how Donald Trump's character was going to define almost every aspect of this unfolding disaster. But it doesn't mean that we can stop paying attention, Simon. What's the latest?
Well, I mean, it is exasperating, isn't it, James? I mean, the performance by the president yesterday in his press conference down at Mar-a-Lago was a masterclass in evasion, in contradiction, and in making it up on the fly. I mean, he got to the point yesterday at Mar-a-Lago where he actually, seriously, with a straight face, was advancing the argument that not only was Iran on the brink of getting a nuclear weapon that could eventually target the United States, although he simultaneously laid claim to the argument that he had completely obliterated all of Iran's nuclear capacity only last July in Operation Midnight Hammer. But he also advanced the claim that Iran was on the brink of taking over the entire Middle East. That, he said, is why he had to act. I mean, luckily they got in just in the nick of time and stopped Iran from taking over the entire Middle East. A completely false, specious claim. There isn't a single analyst out there that can find anything rooted in fact to support that claim. So he says, we've won, but we haven't won enough. When he's pushed on what winning enough looks like, it becomes apparent that he's going to do this for a few more days and then perhaps engage in some kind of partial withdrawal, although what sort of ability he has to constrain Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Israeli forces from continuing their assault on Iran was not addressed during the course of the press conference. And I think it's become evident that behind the scenes, he's had the Qataris and the Saudis particularly putting the arm on him and saying, this has got to stop. This is, we told you not to do this. We've warned you consistently about the risks of this sparking a wider regional conflict in the Middle East. It's laying waste to our economies. It's laying waste to cities like Dubai. It's putting our citizens at risk. You've got now to climb down. And buried in all of this, James, was the complete betrayal of the American people by a president who twice now, during the protests back in January and then again 8 or 9 days ago when this war got underway, said to the Iranian people, first time round, help is on the way. Second time round, now is the time for action. Now is the time for you to seize control of your own destiny. But take a listen to the betrayal of the Iranian people by Donald Trump at the end of the press conference yesterday.
You promised the Iranian people you would help them, but it sounds like you're willing to end this fight after your military objectives have wrapped up. Isn't that a betrayal of the
people? Will I help them? I'd like to, if they can behave. But they've been very menacing. You know, they're great people. They have an amazing population. It's amazing, smart, brilliant, energetic. They have a great point. I'd love to help them, but they have to be in a system that allows them to be helped. And right now they're in a system that only allows failure.
Now, just to be fair to him, I think he had trouble hearing the question. So the early part of that, when he appears to be suggesting that the Iranian people have been menacing him, I think he was really talking there about the Iranian leadership. But as you head further down that answer, and he makes it clear that he can only help people who exist in a system where help is viable, and they unfortunately don't, that was absolutely pulling the rug out from beneath the Iranian people, for whom he's going to offer, it would seem, absolutely no assistance as he begins the process of wrapping this military campaign up.
And of course, on both sides of the Atlantic, that means that the people who profess to be in favour of this action because it would liberate the Iranian people or replace the regime or punish the human rights abuses and the years of oppression and suppression with egg all over their faces. But it doesn't matter because Donald Trump also gives them another reason why they should have supported the war in the first place, even though it completely contradicts the one that was given 10 minutes ago.
But I think it's even more devastating for them than that, James, because again, in that press conference yesterday, he made it apparent that he's perfectly willing to carry on working and dealing with whatever is left of the regime. He doesn't much fancy Mojtaba Khamenei, the supreme leader's son, casting around looking for someone else to lead. But he again cited the example of Venezuela, where he says he's working with the woman he always refers to as Delcy Rodriguez, Maduro's number two in the old government, now running the show. And he thinks she's fabulous and we can just get stuff done with her. And, you know, the subtext of that message is we don't have to worry about elections and democracy and getting the Venezuelan people involved in this. I'm going to be the decider. He said that he and Benjamin Netanyahu mutually would decide when this was all going to wrap up and that he must play a role personally in selecting the next Iranian leader. So this is not an Iranian democracy that he has any interest in fostering whatsoever.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I won't hold my breath for all the apologies and op-eds from all the people who insisted that this was a necessary corrective to the hideousness of the Iranian regime, because they were, at the time, completely ignoring the obvious reality of Donald Trump and what he was most likely to do. Does any of this, and this is a question I'm asking you for the 7 millionth time, does any of this matter in the context? I mean, his approval ratings are plummeting, aren't they? Unemployment figures are bad. Inflation, or at least the price of oil, is going to be going up, despite his attempts to calm things a bit yesterday, which were, a qualified success. Does any of it matter? Does anybody ever show signs of breaking ranks or pulling away from the Trump pantechnicon?
Well, I think it matters in the sense that if he thought this was going to be a cakewalk and he thought that this was going to turn his fortunes around for the midterms, that certainly hasn't played out. And indeed, yesterday in that press conference, we went back to the whole issue of election interference and his argument that mail-in voting is a fraud. I mean, he's definitely returning to all of that very, very soon as an issue. He was actually, on a very rare occasion, held to account over the Tomahawk missile strike on the school in Iran that kicked this conflict off, leading to at least 165 deaths, mostly of school children, many of them girls. And he faced this question from a New York Times journalist.
You just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a Tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this. Even your defense secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday. Why are you the only person saying this?
Because I just don't know enough about it. I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. But Tomahawks are used by others, as you know. Numerous other nations have Tomahawks. They buy them from us. But I will certainly, whatever the report shows, I'm willing to live with that report.
Now, the extraordinary thing about that is not so much the president's response, where he's plainly lying about the notion that this was an Iranian missile strike that went wrong. I mean, we even had Republican senators yesterday, John Kennedy of Louisiana, publicly apologizing for what they conceded had been an American mistake right at the start of the war. But the other flip side to this is that the reporter there from the New York Times is being praised here as though he's Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow rolled into one for performing the rare but traditionally usual role of actually asking the President of the United States a bit of a bouncer, a fairly straight question. And this is a reporter coming from the same newspaper that only it took fully 1 week before they put on the front page of their newspaper an article that pointed out to their readers that actually President Trump had gone to war without any plan for how it was going to end. But so rare is any kind of interaction like that with the president from members of the White House press corps that, you know, there are hosannas ringing out for this reporter who just got to ask Trump a very basic question. It's an extraordinary situation for this country to be in.
I'd missed that, actually. I was probably one of the people queuing up to cover him in plaudits because we're so unused to seeing somebody do something that would have been not even, I mean, it would have been banal in normal times. It would have been a question of unutterable normalness, wouldn't it? It was, of course they're going to ask that. I mean, it is... Yeah, of course. I mean, well done him. He might not be on the next round.
Oh, good on him for doing it.
He might lose his ticket in the room. But goodness me, we shouldn't be... That is a weird one. We should squeeze in a little more on the story you told us about last week. The other reason for the war, that it's all God's will.
Yes, and that story is intensifying. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation that we were talking about last week at the time had received scores of complaints from troops in the field. The number of complaints has now topped 200 about the religiously inspired pep talks that the troops say they are being given by their commanding officers, portraying this military action as being part of the sort of end of days prophecy that is going to return Jesus to Earth for the next 1,000 years. More than 30 Democrats in Congress are now calling on the Pentagon's Inspector General to launch a probe of whether the constitutional separation between church and state has been breached in those pep talks. And we've also seen President Trump again cloaking himself in some pretty extraordinary religious imagery. Yesterday on Truth Social, he reposted a video of a largely forgotten evangelical pastor born in South Africa who moved to the United States, who in 2007 predicted that Trump would ascend to the presidency, and also in another sermon predicted that there would be a massive earthquake in Iran and it was all ordained by God. And those sermons by this pastor, Kim Clement, are suddenly getting an enormous amount of traction among Trump's Make America Great Again and America First followers as the administration does nothing to suggest that it is appalled by any suggestion that it has breached that constitutional separation of church versus state.
On we go. We should. I mean, we haven't got time.
We do indeed, James.
But we haven't got time. We may catch up again tomorrow, or certainly before the end of the week, because I felt that some of the comments he made about the electoral system. I have got time. I'll tell you what it reminded me of: the way he talks about Iran being on the brink of conquering the entire Middle East is very similar rhetorically to how he talks about the Democrats having some nefarious plan to ride roughshod over electoral law. It's as if he's sort of softening people up for doing something hideous by pretending that the other people were about to do it first. Right or wrong?
Yeah, there is no... Right. I mean, there's no question that we're coming straight back to the issue of election jiggery-pokery. Absolutely no doubt about it. He talks about it all the time. He's now... He yesterday suggested that he would not sign any piece of legislation into law unless and until the Save America Act is passed by the Senate. That is an act that would require voter ID this November. And if it doesn't get passed, it's extremely likely that he's going to issue an executive order requiring voter ID to be presented at polling stations all over the country, which, of course, the Democrats oppose because they argue it is an attempt at voter suppression. We are absolutely, definitely coming back to that story within a matter of days because he's going to take us there.
Although it did actually backfire when the sort of pound shop Trump, Boris Johnson, did it in this country, and Jacob Rees-Mogg was the one who gave the game away on that one. Simon Marks, thank you very much indeed. The time now is 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a man has been charged with murdering the Soham child killer Ian Huntley in prison. The 52-year-old died on Saturday after being attacked at HMP Frankland in County Durham last month. LBC's northeast reporter Phoebe Abruzzese is following developments.
The 52-year-old suffered serious head injuries during assaults at a workshop at HMP Frankland last month. He later died in hospital. Durham Constabulary say 43-year-old Anthony Russell's now been charged and is due to appear at Newton Aycliffe Magistrates Court tomorrow. Huntley had been serving a life sentence with a minimum term of 40 years for the murders of 10-year-old schoolgirls Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman in Soham in 2002.
Oil prices have eased in response to President Trump's suggestion that the Iran war may soon be over. The US president has also threatened Tehran with fire and fury if it stops the flow of oil in the Strait of Hormuz. But economists have warned that the conflict will mean inflation remains higher for longer. The Conservative MP Nick Timothy has told LBC that ministers need to guard against a potential new cost of living crisis.
The government is planning to increase fuel duty from September by 5p, which we think is wrong to do in principle, and we would say that the government shouldn't do it anyway, but in this current context, it is mad.
The Chancellor has resisted calls to cancel that planned increase in fuel duty, but Rachel Reeves says she is ready to support a release of international oil reserves to ease the economic impact of the conflict. The Ministry of Defence says that RFA Lime Bay is being prepared in case it's needed in the Middle East. The landing ship is equipped to function as an aviation platform and has medical facilities. It's reported the former footballer Joey Barton has been arrested after an alleged assault near a golf club. It's understood the 43-year-old is one of two people detained after a man was attacked in Merseyside on Sunday. And more than 3,000 legal experts are urging the Prime Minister to rethink proposals to restrict jury trials. Judge-only hearings are being looked at as part of plans to reduce court backlogs in England and Wales. The proposals are being debated in Parliament again today. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 162 at 10,411. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry and cloudy for most. Some brighter spells in the southeast, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
My name is Karen, and this is my NHS story. You don't realise how blind you are until you have cataract surgery. I was referred to a surgical hub, and they booked us in for an operation. It was about 3 weeks before I was there. It's very, very quick.
The government is opening more surgical hubs, with more than 120 already operating across England, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 6 minutes after 12. I find times like this simultaneously quite energising and quite confusing. The appetite to talk about anything else seems to me to be quite dim. But obviously we will, as and when important things occur. Henry Reilly will join us at 12:30 to discuss the latest aberrations by members of Nigel Farage's party. I mean, they can't even agree on what their policy is towards the war in Iran. I don't know whether you've picked up on this. Well, in fact, I shall tell you. There'll be a reverse ferret underway if it hasn't happened already, because the polling is so strong that Farage will have to rejig his position on this, having seen that the public is passionately opposed to it. But just to run through what the various clowns who make up the brains trust at the top of Farage's party have said. Robert Jenrick, this war needs to come to an end as soon as possible. Okay. Richard Tice, who I think is still the deputy leader, we would be helping the Americans and the Israelis in any way they saw appropriate if we were in power. Nadeem Zahawi, he's still hanging around. Whatever the US needs, we should make all of our assets available. That means bases, hardware, logistics. We should join the bombing if needed. So that's three senior members of Reform UK, three completely different positions. And finally, the leader. The Prime Minister needs to change his mind on the use of our military bases and back the Americans in this vital fight against Iran, which is, of course, completely at odds with what he said in 2015, which was, we don't need to take foreign policy advice from the American president. The last time we did that, it was called the Iraq War. So five different positions from four different people. That kind of sums up Farage's outfit, doesn't it? Two from him, two views on that. One is that we should never take foreign policy advice from the American president. The other is that we should do exactly what this American president wants us to do. The big difference, of course, being one of them is white, or at least orange, and one of them is not. That seems to be the defining factor in how Nigel Farage approaches American presidents. But for Jenrick, Tice and... oh, it's so hard to keep up. Who's the other one? Zahawi. Jenrick, Tice and Zahawi to have come up with three completely conflicting positions on the same relatively simple policy question would, in a normal country, provide pause to people thinking of voting for these clowns. And what's Andrea... who cares? Does anybody care what Andrea Jenkins has said? Eleanor does. She said, don't rule anything out. So is that five? Is that six different views from five different people? This is Beth Rigby of Sky News reporting the comments of Andrea Jenkins, who has got a job somewhere with Reform, no doubt. Is that six different positions from five different members of the same party, or is it five? So there's six different things, because Farage also said, no, five people, six positions, because Farage also said, don't ever do what the, you know, you can't let American presidents decide our foreign policy. I'm sure he'll be, imagine if he had actually bumped into Donald Trump this weekend after he flew all the way to America to bump into him and didn't. He no doubt would have said, how dare you interfere in our foreign policy and tell our British Prime Minister what to do? Yeah. So I don't know who keeps up with all this stuff. But what I'm pointing out is that this is our own little Temu version of Donald Trump's regime. The difference being is that they probably have a vague idea about what each other have said in America. Here, they haven't got a clue. Say this, say that, do this, do that. We're in favour of this. We're opposed to this. We're going to do that. We're not going to do that. We're going to... And it brings me back to the two questions that are still in need of further answers from this morning's programme. And they are still pertinent. They are still very much about the same situation. The first is the question no one has answered yet. Has anyone answered it? Because I've asked it two or three times now in various programmes. Why did the usual suspects come out completely in favour of Trump? Charges have been brought against the man accused of murdering Ian Huntley, so there's not a great deal I can say on the subject, except that just because people have broken the law doesn't mean that those who would seek to punish them can break the law as well. I wonder whether you spotted that little parallel, that little analogy. People arguing that because Iran has broken international law, we shouldn't have to obey international law when punishing Iran. And then in your news bulletin today, you learn that the man accused of murdering Ian Huntley has been charged with murder. Now, there is a very important lesson to be learned there. Unfortunately, the people who need to learn it are probably too mutton-headed to do so. And speaking of the mutton-headed, I find myself wondering why anybody would ever have been in favour of this military action. and I'm not getting the answers that I wanted. In Nigel Farage's case, Donald Trump says jump, and Nigel Farage squeals how high. That's, of course, if you can actually get into the room where Donald Trump is. But for our newspapers, cognizant of the lessons of Chilcot and the lessons of Iraq, this is what we touched on yesterday, but we didn't dig deep enough into the question of why have they chosen to ignore Chilcot, ignore Iraq, ignore everything, and come out in favour of a war being led by an obvious idiot and a man widely believed to have already committed genocide. What? Why? What is your explanation for the Tory Reform Media Pact on this issue? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. What is the rationale, the explanation you have? Because I'm too nice sometimes. It can't just be about racism, misogyny and climate change denial. There must be other reasons why people would seek to follow Donald Trump into this ludicrous war. So that is your main question this hour. That's the one I really, really, really want you to answer. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Why? Explain to me what passes for the thinking behind the positions of the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, the leader of the Conservative Party, and to a lesser extent, Nigel Farage. Because in much the same way that Donald Trump will never say anything that upsets Vladimir Putin, so Nigel Farage will never say anything that upsets Donald Trump. But beyond misogyny, racism, and climate change denial, just give me the reasons behind it. Give me the reasons behind it, especially given that you can no longer argue that it's very key, it's very important to punish or remove the Iranian regime, because Donald Trump, as many of us predicted would happen, has completely abandoned any pretense that that was the original intention. So are these people craven, stupid, or just sadly mistaken? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And then I want to continue the question of what the king should do. It's actually got more interesting, not less interesting, while we've been having this conversation, because for me at least, the likelihood of the state visit to mark the 250th anniversary of American independence going ahead seems to me to be in the balance. I would say, well, you know I would, wouldn't I? I'd say it was 52-48 at the minute. If they announced today or tomorrow that the king is not going to visit America next month, how surprised would you be on a scale of 1 to 10? Seriously, how surprised would you be? I'd be a little bit surprised, but nowhere near as surprised as I would be in any other circumstances. And if they do decide not to go ahead, what reason should they give? 0345 6060 973. Should they pull a sickie, which would be a way of sort of having your cake and eating it? Should they go ahead and do the visit anyway in entirely normal circumstances? Should they go on the trip but send a sort of coded message that we disapprove of Donald Trump? Or should they actually say we're not going because the situation is unconscionable, the situation is untenable, the president is a mess? And then option five, which appeared on the list quite late in proceedings, is that they go and King Charles has a sort of Love Actually moment. King Charles actually says, in the presence of or in close proximity to Donald Trump, you, sir, are a cad and a bounder. And I wish that my dear and distant ancestor, George the Third, had never surrendered sovereignty of the United States in the first place. All right, he won't do that. But should he actually use his office and his status to give Donald Trump a bit of a talking to? So we've got two questions here. One rather more serious than the other, I think. Question number one, why did anybody support this war? Especially now that all the reasons that were given for it have fallen apart like a cheap suit, but he'll still pretend that he's won it anyway, as I told you would happen a week ago, word for word. And question number two, what on earth should the poor old king do now? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look. That one's the plough.
Wow. Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back. Feeling cosmic.
And it seems we have an astronaut in the making.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
17 minutes after 12 is the time. Two questions for you. I'm not going to remind you what they are. Let us head to Islington, where Theo is, presumably on a break from his adventures in Ukraine, where he has been doing independent and very powerful journalism. Theo, which question are you answering?
The one about the infatuation
yes.
with Trump, about, you know, from the right-wing elements of our society. I think they're making two sort of major errors.
Is that all?
certainly in this case. Perhaps there's more. I'm sure other callers will educate. But the first one, they still believe that the special relationship is A, real, and B, a two-way street.
Yeah.
And it's a delusion that really cuts through quite a lot of British society, especially, you know, decision makers. And second, they are making the mistake that Trumpism is somehow a path to electoral victory.
Yes.
And that Trump is this goose that lays, you know, golden voting eggs. And that's been, you know, paid a number of times. Certainly, one that comes to mind is Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're stuck in the kind of echo chamber that those more on the left, centre-left, got stuck in prior to the Brexit referendum. And they're beginning to believe that
okay,
this is the route.
Oh, I like that. Yes, so it's a sort of delusion. It's as if they can't quite contemplate the possibility that the public are not just distant from, but detached from their own worldview, their own opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fairly clear. Yes, you brought up the polling numbers in the United States that this misadventure in Iran is not popular there. It's certainly not popular here. People don't want a second, war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan.
So here's a question that you don't have to answer because I'm ambushing you with it. What if Barack Obama had attacked Iran?
I would hope that if he had, he would have a theory of victory. But of course, I can't answer a hypothesis.
Well, you're going to have to, because I insist.
Okay, go on then.
So, it is an impossible hypothetical, because it would never happen. But what if Barack Obama had attacked Iran under exactly the same circumstances that Donald Trump has? Of those people we are discussing, how many of them would have been four square behind Barack Obama if he'd launched this war? Would Nigel Farage have been calling for the Brits to make our bases available? Would Richard Tice be saying that they have to offer up what we have to do, whatever the Americans want us to do? Would Nadeem Zahawi be talking about joining in with bombing raids? Would the Daily Mail be going nuts about how appalling it is that Keir Starmer hasn't jumped in 2 feet first with Barack Obama? But I think this is a really interesting counterfactual, because I think we know the answer.
I think we're going to agree. I think no, and I
they
think
not wouldn't be going near it. They'd be shouting because, from the rooftops about, have we learned nothing from Iraq? Have we learned nothing from Chilcot?
Exactly, and I think because it lacks the second element, it lacks the fact that it's Trump, and they have this bizarre worship of the man, thinking that that's going to get them election wins.
And, of course, Keir Starmer, I believe, and you may not agree with this, Keir Starmer would adopt exactly the same approach, whoever was in the White House, because he is deploying the Chilcot checklist and his own understanding of international law. So if a president to whom he would be traditionally more sympathetic had embarked upon this path, he would, in much the same way that as a Labour Party member, he wrote to Tony Blair in 2003, or he wrote an article for Tony Blair in 2003 for Tony Blair to read about why he felt that the war in Iraq was wrong. So it's a hypothetical that only really trips up the people calling for war because they love Donald Trump so much.
Yeah, and I hope that Starmer would, if it were Obama, you know, take the same position, because
I think he would. I think, in fact, I'd bet on it.
Unworkable.
I would bet on it. And partly because I've read the article he wrote back in 2003, and partly because I have a laminated list of the Chilcot checklist. Listen. Laminated. Asked for it yesterday, got it today. It's exactly what Emily Maitlis feels like every single day in this building. It is 22 minutes after 12. Theo, stay safe. Thank you. Vision, why do we care? This is the Chilcot checklist. Let me run through it very, very quickly. Number two, analysis, what is happening now? Number three, scenarios, what might happen next? Number four, options, what should we do? Number five, legal implications, how do we ensure action is lawful? Number six, policy and strategy, what does success look like? Number seven, resource, what do we need to deliver? Number eight, planning and doing, how should we do it? Number nine, policy performance, how will you monitor performance? Number 10, evaluation, is the policy working? You go down that checklist. Go down that checklist and you can play as either Donald Trump or Keir Starmer. And if you did, the idea that one of them has the right to criticize the other would fall apart in your hands. But of course, it doesn't stop the Mail, the Telegraph. Hey, Melanie Phillips in the Times today is insisting, in direct contradiction of all the available evidence, that the Gulf states are urging Donald Trump not to stop his attacks upon Iran, which, as Simon Marks pointed out, is just not true. I mean, let alone a little bit of a mistake, it's diametrically opposed to the observable evidence. But hey-ho, since when did that stop Rupert Murdoch's munchkin army from misrepresenting the truth? So there you have it. The idea that you would, as anybody vaguely committed to the British national interest, be in favour of this war in Iran disappeared some days ago. Why were people on that bus in the first place? Patrick's in Manchester. Patrick, what do you think?
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
Just briefly, my political background is I've voted Labour in the last election. I voted Conservatives in the past. I agree that there's issues with the what we spend on welfare and immigration, but I just have a real sort of issue with these people that are obsessed with Donald Trump. And as a result, they can't like take a step back and have some sort of like neutrality on any decision that he makes or any sort of morality even. So like, yeah, you know, that we have debates in our office regularly. We have a few guys that you would say sit on the right.
Sure.
And you know, I try and even if you take out the fact that there's people dying, and
yeah,
and you just get it down to the fact of what, how is it going to benefit you bombing Iran, they would just try and justify it. But the reality is, even if you take the fact people are dying out of it, all they're going to do is pay more at the pumps. So there's no personal gain, even if you're looking at it on such a low level. And I just cannot understand for the life of me.
What do they say? I mean, what do you speculate about their motivation?
I'm pretty sure how I see their motivation is, I think majority of people that sit on that side,
yeah,
view this as, my personal opinion is that, yeah, they view it as it's Muslims getting bombed and therefore it's not their problem.
Or it's something that they welcome, even.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. I mean, it repeats itself situation after situation. Like with the ICE shootings that were in, was it Minneapolis?
Yes.
You'd come into work and before, you know, someone would raise the issue and say, oh, that, you know, that stupid woman was murdered because she did X. And it's, yeah, like, well, but how can't you just look at it on a...
You're not a radio phone-in host, are you, Patrick, by any chance? Because I have similar experiences when I arrive at work.
No. But somehow they'll find justification,
yeah,
on why anything was done because Donald Trump ordered it. And you can see that Farage has the same following. And I just
I don't know, I sense you're a bit like me. You're a little bit reluctant, because in other circumstances, these are people you can have a pint with and have a laugh with. You're a little bit reluctant to conclude that what they are seduced by is the racism, the misogyny, and or the climate change denial. And Donald Trump offers such an undiluted hit of that thing or those things that they will go along with absolutely anything and everything else.
Yeah, exactly that, and it doesn't matter on what level. Like, even if you take it, the amount of things that Donald Trump's involved in, you take it to his links with Epstein, and
yeah, of course,
you know,
nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. He's our guy.
You know, and these are people that have got kids, daughters themselves, wives. But it's just like, oh no, you know, Trump's the man. And I think you get ever more frustrated with world politics and our own politics, when for me, all you can see happening is Farage winning the next election. And it's like, you feel like there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Because it will just signal our descent into a similar sort of universe of lies and bigotry and prejudice. And people will continue to love it, even as it all falls apart around their ears, because he's the real deal. He really hates foreigners and women and climate change reality as much as they have been persuaded to. Do you ever break a spell? Does anybody ever wobble? Do you ever see people? Because it's why I come to work every day, really, Patrick. Do you ever see people finally waking up to the lies they have been sold? Because nobody is born believing the things that we're talking about. It's something that has been done to them.
I don't think so. I mean, I've seen this happening over so many years, not even specific to Trump. I remember I was working in Rochdale for a number of years, and everybody in that office, at the time of Brexit, was so pro-Brexit. Yeah. So, and because, based on their own circumstances, they were living in a place that had been, you know, at a high level of immigration, and they didn't recognise their local town, and they just thought, well, this is the saviour. This will get us back to where we used to be. And everyone's got the same opinion now with Farage.
It's just going to bring back some mythical Facebook
some great
version of Britain where we're all drinking out of hose pipes and living on Spangles.
Freddos were 50p, and you know, the kids could go down the road and be safe. And yeah, it's just it's like people are brainwashed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it is, that's why I ask about breaking the spell and what it takes. It would appear that some element of Donald Trump's spell has either been broken or not worked on both sides of the Atlantic with this engagement. But as I said at the top of the show, it won't be permanent. There will be people who jump back on the bandwagon when he moves on to a different attack, when he starts attacking, as Patrick reminded us, the people that got murdered by ICE agents and border security agents in Minneapolis are American citizens. A lot of the people being rounded up and deported are legal American residents. But their stories don't matter, because people love the cruelty. And if it's the cruelty that you love, two things are true. Number one, you're never going to, or you're highly, highly unlikely ever to U-turn on it and recognise the cruelty as something that you should hate. But number two, there's never going to be enough. It's a personal thing. There's never going to be enough cruelty, because what these people do is they think that by hurting others, they will somehow reduce the amount of pain that they live with, the amount of pain that they feel. And it sound like strong words when you're just talking about someone's colleagues in an office in Manchester or in a radio station in London or in a White House in Washington, D.C., but it's simply true. Everybody lives with a degree of pain. Everybody lives with a degree of trauma. But if you're defined by your pain and your trauma, if it is childhood cruelty, absent parents, cruel parents, alcoholic parents, if all of the issues of trauma and neglect, and it could be your schooling, it might not be your parents, have defined the person that you've become, you are subconsciously persuaded that you will feel better if you can hurt others. And you will never feel better. It's the same with money. The pain inside will go away if I am rich. And then you're the richest man in the world, and you are still a husk of a man. So you try the cruelty, and that doesn't work either. So you're the richest man in the world. You're doing Nazi salutes at public meetings. You've turned cruelty into a spectator sport on the social media platform that you've bought, and you're still a miserable, hollow human, and you can't for the life of you understand why, when all you really have to do is try being nice. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
The US Defense Secretary has reiterated that America will not stop the war with Iran until Tehran is defeated. Pete Hegseth says the US military will continue until it permanently denies Iran the ability to make nuclear weapons. A man has been charged with murdering Soham killer Ian Huntley. The 52-year-old died on Saturday after being attacked at HMP Frankland in County Durham last month. And former footballer Joey Barton has been charged following an assault near a golf course in Merseyside on Sunday. The 43-year-old has been charged with wounding with intent and will appear before magistrates today. LBC weather, largely cloudy today with sunny spells in the southeast, patchy rain for the northwest, longer spells of rain for Northern Ireland by this evening, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Taxis changing from April 2026.
If you're a sole trader or a landlord
with a turnover above £50,000,
you'll need to use recognised software to keep records
and send quarterly updates of your income and expenses.
There's no avoiding it. Tax is changing. Get ready. Search HMRC Making Tax Digital.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
33 minutes after 12 is the time, and it is time for Riley's Reform Roundup.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry, I didn't expect that to be quickly.
Riley's Reform Roundup. No, hang on, I haven't finished yet.
Oh, sorry.
Back in
sorry,
the
sorry.
Oh, dear. So, the thing is, Henry, something extraordinary happened yesterday. Because okay. I got hold of, I mean, this isn't the extraordinary bit, the Chilcot checklist, the 10 questions that the 7-year, £10 million Chilcot inquiry distilled down to a sort of guide to not making the same mistakes as Iraq again.
Yeah.
And I said to my crack team, of operatives, yeah, them.
Yeah.
I said, can I get it laminated? Now, as you may be aware, on this programme, when I ask for something, it generally takes about 6 months to happen. On this occasion, 24 hours. I came to work with, thank you very much. Well done, Eleanor, Keith, everybody, Rebecca. So I got a laminated. This is what, I'm doing this joke for the third time now, because I love this joke. This is what it feels like to be Emily Maitland. But the thing is, now that we've decided on a title for Riley's Reform Roundup, I'm thinking we could maybe get a jingle.
Merchandise or not?
A bit early for merch.
All right, sorry.
Could we get, or should I just take the win, Keith? Should I just take the win, or shall I think maybe I get some production for Riley's Reform Roundup, and in the same kind of time scale that I got my laminate? Anyway, what have you got?
There's a few. Let's start. I think probably the biggest story is Warwickshire. Now, you'll recall they have the youngest council leader in the country. This is George Finch, who's the Reform UK leader of Warwickshire Council. It's a Reform-controlled administration, but they're the minority party, as it were, so they don't have a majority. He now faces, though, a no-confidence vote. He's being accused of bringing Warwickshire County Council into disrepute. He was appointed last summer at the age of 19.
Wow.
The vote has been forced by Green Party councillors, so there'll be a vote next week at the next full council meeting, but they claim he's abused the office for leader. Should I tell you about some of the reasons why they claim that? So, firstly, please. There was a dispute with police over the handling of a very serious case involving the rape of a 12-year-old girl.
Oh, God.
The council leader had initially claimed that the force and the Home Office were not providing the full information surrounding the incident. The police then said that they did not and would not cover up such criminality. So there was a suggestion that they were not laying the full facts out in the open, so said the council leader, but the police have hit back at that. Mm. There was also another row with the council's chief executive, Monica Fogarty, no relation, over pride flags.
Have you checked?
I haven't actually.
No,
but
exactly.
I'm sure.
Be
sorry.
Careful.
Sorry, I should be. No, I actually think I have checked before. This is there was a situation where Warwickshire County Council, as the chief executive, she had... sort of approved the use of some pride flags because it was Pride Month. Councillor George Finch, though, said that he wanted them taken down. It was
we know why he wanted them taken down?
They have
people love flags.
Well, they have a policy that the only flags... I need to check this, but I think it's the St. George's and the Union flag are the only flags they permit. So other flags are not allowed.
Right.
But Councillor Finch said that he wanted them removed. Ms. Fogarty said that actually she has the power. So what they've done is they've now stripped her of the responsibility for flags. And it's now with the chairman of the council, who was previously reformed.
But more chaos, more mess.
But the council chairman has been... suspended for a separate matter. So there's a new chairman, as far as I'm concerned. So it's not the same chairman who initially had that. He was also criticised for describing in a podcast a boots on the neck type methods to get things done, which attracted a lot of criticism with council workers saying they felt unsafe to go to work. They weren't particularly happy with his what they called repeat attacks on staff, partner institutions, and his role for cheap and nasty political point scoring. I have to say that Councillor Finch says he wants an officer-led council and that he was implying some of the employees were reluctant to act on his wishes.
But Farage was always very strong on the importance of having people in political roles who had experience of business in the real world. Himself, of course, being a failed metals trader, and most recently the chairman of a company that received a winding up order from His Majesty's Revenue and Customs. He subsequently made a lot of money, of course, in business, but sadly only as a consequence of being a politician for hire. So how can a 19-year-old be leading a council?
Well, their argument is that there are a lot of... It's not dependent on age. He's young, he's ambitious.
No, but I've heard him say that you know, the reason why these politicians are all so rubbish is because they've never worked in the real world, although I believe he became a politician about 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, the reform argument is that Councillor Finch is doing a good job and that whatever age you are, you can be a council leader.
Right, so where was that again?
That was Warwickshire.
Warwickshire. And on to Derbyshire.
Derbyshire, yes. This is a brewing story, which I have to say, courtesy of one of our listeners, who didn't want to be named. Yeah, sorry. Our listeners.
There's no point being proprietary. Well, so you've been getting tip-offs.
Been getting tip-offs.
I like it.
I'll give
for
my
Riley's
email,
reform round
actually, yeah.
Do that.
But I always appreciate the tips. This is a Glossop tip, a reform...
It's actually a tip.
It's actually a tip,
Fantastic. You've got a tip about a tip.
I've got a tip about a tip.
This is just such a wonderful moment.
I've waited all day to say
never
that.
Never get another one like this, you know.
So this is in Derbyshire. There's the Glossop tip. A reform councillor has actually joined the rebellion, saying that we need to keep this tip open. The brass tacks of this, James, are basically there's the Glossop Household Waste Recycling Centre. They want to close it to save £360,000 as part of what they want, which is over £22 million worth of savings.
Oh.
The issue the Reform Party say is that our tip is on the border with Greater Manchester, and so you've got these sort of pesky people who aren't paying council tax coming over and using our tip.
Mm.
The argument, though, from locals, who they say, well, actually, it is widely used. We're at a point where if we don't collect people's rubbish or give them a place where they can dispose of their recycling or waste, then it's going to mount up and it's going to put pressure on the other tips. It's a bit of an argument at the moment. The fact that you've now got Jason Isherwood, who's a Reform UK councillor, joining with the Green Party, Labour, Lib Dems, Conservatives to oppose the plan, may well see a U-turn. But nonetheless, it is still policy for them to close this Glossop tip.
Well, I mean, taking Protect Our Borders all the way to the Glossop Manchester hinterland. Who'd have thought it? Do you use the tip much?
in Glossop or... No, I don't actually.
Do you not? We obviously do.
Do you?
You know, I'm very boring and middle-aged and do a lot of gardening and all that kind of thing. And it's quite a rigmarole getting into the tip. You need... There's number plate recognition. You have to book a slot and be registered, which proves that you live in the relevant catchment area. And then when you get there, they've got your car registration number on file and the lovely bloke on the front desk, the front, like, in the little shed, waves you in. So how would people be able to use the Glossop tip if they weren't entitled to?
Well, they'd have to go elsewhere, basically. So there's nine other tips, so say, reform, and this is in the High Peak area where they say there are two other
beautiful
sites.
Beautiful part of the world. It really is. Cannot recommend it highly enough. I was a kid in Glossop, but I didn't really remember that. I was too young, but I've been back since, and it is an absolutely stunning part of the world.
A point that's worth pointing out, James, as well, is this is a point made by the Conservatives and the Lib Dems locally, that they recently had allocated £2.6 million of government funding. The Conservatives said they should either keep the Glossop tip open or reduce a council tax increase, which is currently 4.9%. Reform UK say, though, that they're looking for savings wherever possible.
How many is that?
That's two so far.
I've got one for you.
Wow. What?
Yeah. I want a piece of the action. Riley's reform roundup's getting too popular. I'm in danger of losing control of my own creation. So I've got one for you now. And this is, to be fair, this has been picked up elsewhere. It's been picked up by ITV Meridian's correspondent in Kent, a splendid young journalist called Kit Bradshaw. And I particularly enjoyed this because I spend a lot of time putting the boot into much older and more experienced journalists for not knowing how to interview Nigel Farage. I can't say who I'm talking about because I'm going to an event tonight and they'll probably be there. So you'll have to give me a week before I start mentioning by name all the BBC journalists that give Nigel Farage a free pass on a regular basis. Oh, go on then, Laura Koonsberg. But the way you do it is this. This is Kit Bradshaw for ITV Meridian yesterday.
On the politics of it, your leaflets at last year's local elections promised to reduce waste and cut your taxes. Most of the councils that you took control of are putting council tax up, including Kent, 3.99%.
So across the country, we're putting up council tax less than the other parties where they control councils. Our average increase is less than the rate of inflation. We've made over £300 million of savings across the councils. And by the way, I never said we'd cut. I never said we
cut. Your leaflet said cut your taxes.
Well, which means don't charge the maximum of 4.99%.
Most people would think that would be cutting your taxes.
Never once in the country ever did I say we would cut council tax.
Was it a mistake to put it on your leaflet?
I never put it on my leaflets.
You did? It said reduce waste and cut your taxes. Those were the words.
Nothing with my name ever went on that.
That was on a Reform UK leaflet in Kent.
Nothing with my name ever went on that. But what I did say is we'd save money and we are saving money.
So no such claims will appear on your leaflets this year, then?
We did not say we would cut tax.
Reduce waste and cut your taxes. That was on a Reform UK leaflet in Kent.
Well, cutting taxes can mean not putting them up as much, I suppose, but I never promise cuts in council tax.
So if your taxes goes up, Nigel Farage has actually cut them. He is claiming there in that clip with the splendid Kit Bradshaw of ITV Meridian. I have to say, to be fair, in the interest of balance, the BBC's bloke in Kent, Michael Keogh, and he's a very sharp operator as well. They're very lucky down in Kent to have such quality correspondents. But there it is, Nigel Farage doing a kind of very pound shop version of Donald Trump, playing fast and loose with the truth, claiming that because his name wasn't on a leaflet that was a Reform UK leaflet, then he isn't in any way responsible for what is on that leaflet, and then claiming that if your tax goes up, it will actually be accurate to claim that your tax has actually been cut. Your turn.
One more from me. This is, there's sort of two linked in one, but this is the Welsh leader, Dan Thomas, who you'll recall he was previously a council leader in Barnet in London.
Do we know where he lives yet?
Unclear as to his address. He did, you recall, live in sort of Bath way. He lived in Barnet.
He lived in Barnet and then he lived in Bath.
Yeah.
Where would he have to move to carry on the alliteration if he was moving to Wales?
Bangor.
So he went from Barnet to Bath. No, it needs to have a bar sound at the beginning. So Bangor. Bangor.
Bangor.
Bangor.
So unclear about the address. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
But he has... there's a bit of a U-turn. I know that's a sort of hackneyed phrase in politics and a lot of sort of throwing around of politicians doing a U-turn. This has been accused of Reform UK doing a U-turn on this because at the launch, it was... you know, sort of very glitzy, Reform UK, lots of people in the audience. The council leader, ex-council leader, leader of Reform in Wales, Dan Thomas, had said that they would not be publishing the costings because he was worried that, quote, other party would steal their policies. Their policies are, for instance, getting rid of 20 mile an hour speed limits. But he said, we will not be publishing our full costings because other parties will steal our ideas.
this guy's a genius. So we can just do away with manifestos entirely.
And steal our policies.
This is why I never let Sheila Fogarty see my rundown before I come on the radio at 10 o'clock in the morning, because she'll steal all my ideas.
He said, we will not be publishing our costings, but we do have a costed manifesto.
Right.
However,
of course we do. Just goes to a different school.
In an interview with a Welsh broadcaster later on that day, Nigel Farage said, you will have a full list of costings. And it's been revealed that there was a discussion internally between the Welsh Reform team. And Dan Thomas has now said the plan was not to publish the costings, but we had a chat and we will actually publish them. When he was asked when voters will be able to see them, he said, very, very soon.
And we still don't know whether he lives in Wales or not. Although that'll probably get cleared up fairly soon. It doesn't sound like the right arm knows what the far right arm is doing.
It is what it is.
Which brings us to the comments I pointed out earlier regarding the war in Iran. Let's run through the brains trust of Reform UK. Robert Jenrick says, this war needs to come to an end as soon as possible. Nor do we see why British aircraft should become involved in offensive action. And then Richard Tice, he's still a thing, said, we would be helping the Americans and the Israelis in any way that they saw appropriate. And then we come to Nadeem Zahawi. He said, whatever the US needs, we should make all of our assets available. That means bases, hardware, logistics. We should join the bombing if needed. And then Nigel Farage said, the Prime Minister needs to change his mind on the use of our military bases and back the Americans in this vital fight against Iran. Of course, back in 2015, he was adamant that we should never dance to an American president's tune, but that American president was black. So it's an entirely different story now. So that is four members of the Reform UK Brains Trust, and five different positions on the single most important event currently facing the world. Let's hear the latest.
Given that we can't even send a Royal Naval vessel to defend British sovereign territory at an RAF base, we certainly don't have the capability to offer anything of any value to the Americans or the Israelis. So defending the base, recognising the catastrophe that is now the Royal Navy. And by the way, President Macron is really, frankly, showing the humiliating state that we've sunk to today with his very decisive actions and his intention to help clear the Straits of Hormuz. And the other point is protecting British citizens. I think so far the government have hired one charter plane, and even that broke down and was 24 hours late. So yes, we should never, ever, ever have said no to the Americans using the bases, particularly Diego Garcia. And interestingly, Mauritius have been very, very clear. They would not have allowed that base to be used at all. So there are differing opinions as to whether we should physically join the attacks. I, as leader, am saying to you, if we can't even defend Cyprus, let's not get ourselves involved in another foreign war.
That's six different positions, then. Let's not get involved in another foreign war, says Nigel Farage, while blathering nonsense about Cyprus. Why can't... Who was the bloke yesterday who paid for Farage to fly to America?
This is a donor to Reform.
Was that his own jet? Did he have his own jet, or did he just pay for Farage to charter a jet? Why can't he pay to get British people back? Why isn't Nigel Farage calling upon his billionaire donors to help get people? They did it with the dogs and the cats when we were coming out of Afghanistan. And also, someone's done you a grave disservice. They say that you've missed a story about a Reform council selling off artwork. But I said, no, you did that yesterday.
Did that yesterday.
God, keep up, will you?
Get
it's Riley's Reform Roundup. Get out of town.
Yeah.
God.
Hell.
Flipping heck.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Iranian missile attacks are down 90%, but no let up by America or Israel, says Pete Hesketh. And how should double child murderer Ian Huntley be disposed of?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg. Flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier.
As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to like arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12.52 is the time. You forgot to give the email.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. People have said they'd be struggling to get in touch. So it is henry.riley.
R-I-L-E-Y
at global.com.
And this is for tips?
About?
Not just.
Tips, but
anything reform, really. This is for Riley's Reform Roundup.
Yeah.
Henry.Riley at global.com.
Global.com. That's
it. Tips about tips, particularly welcome, but we've probably covered that territory as well as we could hope to this week.
Yes.
But you never know. There might be another tip related. But tips about anything.
Tips about, well, yeah.
Reform related.
Yeah, I mean,
reform
not related. Sort of general, but well, maybe
when
general.
To mow the lawn.
But yes, that would be very much welcome. Thank you.
And Barmouth. Barmouth. Barnet, Bath, Barmouth.
Oh, yeah, yes.
That's where Barmouth. It needs to move to if we want to keep the sort of quite pleasing alliterative tone going.
And I'll tell you if we get an answer to that question.
We will. Thank you very much, Henry Riley. 12.53 is the time. I've got an unhinged headline for you as well while we're at it. I'm just giddy with excitement about my laminate being achieved. This is an absolute doozy. And listen, this is fun, just like Riley's Reform Roundup is fun, but it's also important. And I'll explain why in a moment.
Unhinged headline.
So someone called Hamish de Breton Gordon got paid, presumably by the Daily Telegraph, to write under this headline. Are you ready? The US has now removed two dictators. Putin will be trembling in his boots. And it's not a joke. I'm not going to read the article. Life's too short. I presume the other dictator is Maduro, right? Who's been replaced by his own deputy, who has not been elected, and who is therefore technically a dictator. And the other one would be the Ayatollah Khamenei, who has been replaced by his son, Khamenei Jr., as they call him. And that is an article you can write and get paid for by the Daily Telegraph, if your name is Hamish de Breton Gordon. The US has now removed two dictators. Putin will be trembling in his boots. This would be the same Putin that Donald Trump rang yesterday for an hour and relayed to the waiting world that Donald Trump had been, that Vladimir Putin had been congratulating him on how well he has done in Iran. Probably a lie, but if it's true, it's even more shameful than the lie would be. I obsess slightly about this stuff in the case of the Telegraph because it was my late father's old paper, but how does that man ever, or indeed whoever commissioned this nonsense, how do they ever work in journalism again? The US has now removed two dictators. Putin will be trembling in his boots. Daily Telegraph's got a new buyer lined up now. Viscount Rothermere has failed in his attempts to get his hands on it. I presume, I mean, I can't imagine anything getting worse under German ownership. I mean, there's an irony there as well. Daily Telegraph, one of the big cheerleaders for Brexit, and it's about to be bought by a German media company. Nigel Farage, one of the great enemies of the notion of a European army, presumably because Vladimir Putin hates the idea of a European army, currently blowing smoke up Emmanuel Macron's derriere over their military capabilities. If only we were all part of the same force, eh, Nigel? Now, who was it again that argued why we should be diametrically opposed to any form of European army without explaining what on earth there was about an army we were in to be frightened of? 12:56 is the time. Oh, hang on, we better just top and tail.
Unhinged headline.
That's the worst in a very long time, actually. And normally I find unhinged headline amusing and diverting, but the fact that someone can write that in a newspaper of still some repute is absolutely breathtaking. And nobody in that command structure has stopped to go, we can't publish this. It looks like something out of Viz. The US has now removed two dictators. Putin will be trembling in his boots. We can't publish that. It looks like The Onion. But they have. They've published it, and presumably somebody got paid. Have I got time to squeeze in one more call? These poor people have been waiting for hours while I've been wanging around with Henry Reilly and Reilly's reform roundup and doing unhinged headline and indulging various other idiosyncrasies and enthusiasms. Paul in Cambridge, I bet you can't even remember why you rang in the first place.
Sorry, I reversed the charges, James.
What happens if they... No, don't stop it. Carry on. What should the king do about the state visit?
Well, so what the king... I actually got answered to three questions. One you didn't answer.
Go on, then.
So the king, he shouldn't go, right? Absolutely shouldn't go. We've got to stop honouring this orange fool, this monster. We've got to stop honouring him, and the king going's an honour. We shouldn't... To be honest, we shouldn't play the World Cup there either.
No,
but
I agree with that, too.
Obviously.
Hang on a minute. Don't be a phone-in in a couple of weeks. Don't jump the gun.
So as far as the reason why people flock to please Trump by saying we should join his war, it's very simple. He is an immoral, vile idiot who, unfortunately, is the font of the greatest power source in the whole world. And they just see it, as others have seen it, that this is a way of tapping into that power source by pleasing him and bending to him. Everything he does is about the use of unchecked power, whether it's being involved with Epstein and young children,
allegedly.
Whether it's open corruption, allegedly. You know, I could go on about that for a bit, but I won't.
No.
War...
So if Obama was leading the war, it's a pointless counterfactual, this, because he would not be offering unchecked power.
Of course not. He'd be asking the people, at least give him a
or
nod.
Congress, or indeed...
Yeah, of course, Congress, the people via Congress.
So it's seductive. It's the seductive power of totalitarianism or dictatorship.
Yeah, and it leans right wing.
Always.
Epstein showed that he was leaning right wing.
Not just leaning, mate. I mean, that's one of the great underreported elements of the Epstein files, probably correctly, given some of the other filth that's in there. But he was a huge supporter of Nigel Farage's good friend Steve Bannon and his plans to turn the whole of Europe to the far right, celebrating Brexit, of course. And Nigel Farage, of course, thanks Steve Bannon for helping to deliver Brexit. It's almost as if some people who claim to care about this country don't care a fig about the actual facts. Perish the thought. Not you, though, Paul, in Cambridge, on reverse charge calls. It's 12:59. You have been listening to James O'Brien on LBC, Free Global Player, or LBC app if you want to rewind live radio and stay up to date with all the latest news. Load of podcasts as well, including Full Disclosure, which is just a frankly extraordinary listen this week with the Labour MP and an exceptional human being, Naz Shah. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much, James. I've been having a challenging discussion with myself this morning in my head, you'll be pleased to hear, over how to appropriately dispose of the remains of Ian Huntley, who you will remember abducted and murdered little girls in 2002. I know what the right answer is, but it certainly isn't the answer that I felt in my guts when I thought about it. So let's talk about what all of that reveals. We'll talk about it at 3. I'm going to stick with the war in Iran, between now and then, though. Public support has risen for Keir Starmer's approach, his decision not to support America's attacks on Iran. The Iranian ambassador to the UK spoke to Andrew Marr yesterday. Andrew joins me to talk about that and more, all coming up here on LBC.
on your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the US Defence Secretary says today will be the most intense of the war in Iran. Peter Hegseth says the military operation will continue until Tehran is permanently denied a nuclear weapon.
For 47 years, these barbaric savages in the Iranian regime have murdered our brothers in arms. Now they race toward a nuclear bomb to hold the world hostage. That race to a nuclear bomb, President Trump will never allow it. Not now, not ever, not on our watch.
Oil prices have eased after Donald Trump suggested the conflict may be over soon. The price of a barrel had climbed above $100 yesterday, and it dipped closer to $90 after President Trump's remarks. But economists are continuing to warn it will mean inflation remains higher for longer, with the cost of petrol already rising. A man has been charged with murder following the death of Ian Huntley. The 52-year-old was attacked in a high-security jail in Durham at the end of February. Huntley was convicted of murdering schoolgirls Jessica Chapman and Holly Wells in Cambridgeshire in 2002. LBC's North East reporter Phoebe Abbratsaysi is following developments.
The 52-year-old suffered serious head injuries during assaults at a workshop at HMP Frankland last month. He later died in hospital. Durham Constabulary say 43-year-old Anthony Russell's now been charged and is due to appear at Newton Aycliffe Magistrates Court tomorrow.
Former footballer Joey Barton is due to appear in court after being charged with an assault near to a golf club in Merseyside. Emergency services were called on Sunday evening after a man suffered serious injuries to his face. He's in a serious but stable condition in hospital. And senior midwife and investigator Donna Ockenden has been named as chair of an investigation into maternity services in Leeds. Her appointment has been welcomed by families affected. Ms. Ockenden is currently examining how hundreds of babies died or were injured in Nottingham. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 152 points at 10,401. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, largely cloudy today with sunny spells in the southeast, patchy rain for the northwest, longer spells of rain for Northern Ireland by this evening, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
We're here at Cheltenham with racing fans ready to play Coral's Reward Shaker. Listen to that roar! And with 100,000 free bets up for grabs every day at the Cheltenham Festival, they're all shaking. We've got the Tweeders shaking for a £5 free bet. The Black Cappers bagging a free bet too. Oh, tidy! Play Coral's free reward shaker to win guaranteed rewards and special offers. Oh, that's rewarding. Coral, we're here for it.
18 plus, UK online only. Max one reward or offer per player per day. 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Reward restrictions, requirements and T's and C's apply. Gambleaware.org.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. Well, since the beginning of this war on Iran by America and Israel, and then obviously the retaliation from Iran as well in the past week or so, it wouldn't be lunchtime without Pete Hegseth, would it? The American Defense Secretary, or the Secretary of War, as I think he calls himself. Here's what he's been saying today.
Iran stands alone, and they are badly losing. On day 10 of Operation Epic Fury, we are winning. With an overwhelming and unrelenting focus on our objectives, which are the same as the day I gave my first briefing here on Operation Epic Fury. They're straightforward, and we are executing them with ruthless precision. One, destroy their missile stockpiles, their missile launchers, and their defense industrial base. Missiles and their ability to make them. Two, destroy their navy. And three, permanently deny Iran nuclear weapons forever. It's a laser-focused maximum authority mission delivered with overwhelming and unrelenting precision. No hesitation, no half measures. As President Trump declared yesterday, we're crushing the enemy in an overwhelming display of technical skill and military force. We will not relent until the enemy is totally and decisively defeated. But we do so. We do so on our timeline and at our choosing. For example, today will be yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran. The most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes. Intelligence more refined and better than ever.
Well, that's possibly the first time I've heard anything, forget the tone of it and the gung-ho sound of it all, but he did seem to list intention there, didn't he? Because the one of the big questions has been the degree to which they actually had a plan here. Destroying missiles and capacity to launch missiles, destroying the Navy. We are told that 50 Navy ships have been sunk or destroyed, and to obliterate their nuclear capacity. So these are American claims. You know, they're saying there as well that Iran's missile count has gone down by 90%, the missiles it's firing, which, if it is on that scale, will come as a relief to its neighbours, won't it? We'll hear from Andrew Marr in just a moment, because he had a long conversation, which I heard yesterday evening, with the Iranian ambassador to the UK, who is so fascinating to listen to, because he's, I suppose it's why he's an ambassador. He has a sort of calm, equable demeanour about him, but really doesn't answer some questions that he does need to answer. His name is Syed Ali Mousavi. Take a listen.
You see, first of all, that I'm very sorry regarding for this crisis made by, this war made by the American and Israeli regimes against all of the peoples living in the region, including the British peoples. But I do believe that there is no any intention from the Iranian side to harm them. There is no, because we know the exact location of the military bases, the properties of American side in them, in these countries. And if they want to come back their own country, it depends up them. It up to them. And I'm telling you, and I'm assuring you that there is no any hostility from Iranian side, not only for the British people who are living there, but also for all of the civilians people living in the Persian Gulf countries.
Because your country has attacked Akrotiri, the RAF base in
Cyprus.
No,
not at all. That the Ministry of
Defense,
the Ministry of Defense made the declaration that this is a one example of the flag, false flag. No, they Ministry of Defense mentioned that there is no any signs that all of these drones belongs to the Iranians. No, that it's a very important that now I do believe you know what I mean. There are many false flags making some riots and chaos in our region. For example, regard for Turkey, Azerbaijan, all of them are flags. And regarding for the your base, military base in Cyprus
so
as well.
So where do you think the missile came from, if not from you?
No, not at all.
Somewhere.
No. I'm telling to you that, we have a very important and historical diplomatic relations, although that is now challenging, but I do believe me as a Iranian